Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. Be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Logic, political talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. So check that out. Tonight we have our very special guest, Charles Strange, where we will discuss his son, Michael Strange, of SEAL Team 6 and Extortion 17. And we do have our guest on the line, as well as our panelists, Dan Gray, Cindy Todd, Kelly Mordecai, and James Neighbors. And we also have some other folks I know who would like to come in. We do have our guest for about an hour and a half, so I'll ask about the half hour questions myself. Then we'll bring in the panelists, and then we'll have another half hour open up for anyone who would like to call and speak or ask questions to our guest, Charles Strange, tonight. So give us a call at 347-945-7428. And if you would like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial, and we'll get you in. But first, without any further ado, we will bring in our special guest tonight, and that is Mr. Charles Strange. Thank you very much, Charlie, for coming to the show. How are you?
Hey, Robert. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate your support.
Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
I appreciate your support. We got a lot going on with our Michael Strange Foundation. We also have a foundation. We bring the Gold Star moms, dads, brothers, and sisters in for a weekend retreat with paid grief counselors. That's at MichaelStrangeFoundation.org. Yes.
Yeah, we'll definitely want to talk more about that. But first, we'll start off, as I said, I just have about 6 questions myself, and I'm bringing the panel. Some of them are eager to speak with you. And so, of course, just in the beginning, I'm going to open up the mic to you to tell us your story and what you've been going through since the August 6, 2011, and tell us about Michael and what happened that night.
Well, Michael was part of SEAL Team 6 for 4 years, and April 2011, he called me, and he said, "Dad, everything's getting shut off. You won't be able to hear from me for a couple of weeks." I'm like, "You're all right, son? You're all right?" He says, "Yeah, Dad, I'm all right." I said, "You sure, Mike? What's going on? You okay?" He said, "Ah, if something happens, you'll hear about it." Next thing you know, the Bin Laden raid happened or didn't happen or whatever happened over there. And Michael came home in June of 2000, a month later. And for the first time, Robert, he grabbed me by the bicep, and he said, "Dad, I got a will." I said, "A will?" He said, "Dad, I'm not messing around, da-da-da-da-da." He grabbed me by the bicep 3 times that weekend. And he also grabbed me and said, "Dad, you wouldn't believe what's going on in this country." And then he stopped at Aunt Maggie's house, told her about the will, and left Philadelphia 4 days early. He never did that before. And 93 days after the Bin Laden raid, my son was in a helicopter called Extortion 17 with 30 guys. It was the biggest loss of life in the Iraq and Afghan war, and it was also the biggest loss of life, 22 guys from the DEV group, Naval Special Warfare, in the history of America, 22. And there was also Bart the Warrior Dog. We don't want to forget Bart. John Ducandero was the dog handler. So that's the worst day of my life, August 6th. I hear my son gets killed. I'm out of my mind. I'm still out of my mind. I got a piece of my heart missing. And August 2011, I go down to Dover, and we're in the hangar, and wait for all the bodies to come in, and President Obama put his hands on my shoulders and looked at me. He said, "Michael changed the way America lived." And I grabbed Mr. President by the shoulders. I started shaking him. I said, "I don't need to know about my son, sir. I need to know what happened here." And, of course, the Secret Service guys grabbed me, and I was doubled over crying. And Mr. Obama came up to me again and went to give me a hug, and I whispered in his ear, "Is there going to be a congressional inquiry or investigation?" And he whispered back in my ear, "Mr. Strange, we're going to look into this very, very, very deep." And I believe he knew my son. My son was a cryptologist. Got all kinds of medals, awards. They just gave him a medal, only 19 been given out in the history of America, from the NSA, the Clapper Memo. Very honorable. Very difficult to see your son's name in a wall. But October 2011, we go down to Damneck. All the families are in like a theater. And General Jeffrey Colt, Brigadier Jeffrey Colt, did the investigation over in Afghanistan. He's going to tell us what happened to our sons. October 12, 2011, all the big brass is there. And he's going on, he's telling us what happened. I raised my hand. I said, "How about an after-action report?" And he said, he hesitated. He goes, "It's in the book." I asked him about something else. He said, "It's in the book." I said, "What happened to the black box, which is really orange?" And he raised his hands and he said, "A flash flood came and washed it away." So I'm out of my head, you know, and they give us this binder, and a couple days later, while I'm home, I open up to see what happened, read this report, and there was no ink, no toner in the printer. You couldn't read it. All the pages. So I called up Admiral Sean Pybus, Commander-in-Chief of CENTCOM, and he says, "Oh, Charlie, I got a lot of complaints about that." I said, "All right, send me another one." He said, "We can't. We burned it." I said, "You burned it?" But in there was a pack. There was a disc, and another family member told me they were going to ask for the disc back. So I put the disc in, and 100 little blocks pop up. and you click it, nothing. All of a sudden you click it again and it opens up just a little bit, but it's blurry and some other things. And my wife, she figured out how to download this disc, and it was 1,364 pages. And
wow.
This was, yeah, it tells you right in the 1,364 pages, Robert, the Taliban were sitting there waiting for him. There was 30 Taliban under a tree line with motorcycles. I mean, it tells you everything, motorcycles, RPGs, AK-47s. There was Taliban on, there was a building there on top of the tower. There was a tower on top of this building. They actually called about the two guys on top of the tower. And the Afghan administration said they were hanging crops. Here there was Taliban running in and out of the building. It's in the 1,300 pages. And they sent this 1960 Chinook, refurbished in 1985, Extortion 17, right in the middle. So my questions are, who sent them in? Why'd you send them in? The Rangers, it says over and over, were in no trouble. Then they said they were chasing this guy named Quarry Tahir, who was a high-level mark. So you're going to send 30 of our guys, plus there was 8 Afghans on the Chinook, which we never found out the names of the Afghans. There's just too many unanswered questions. And I've been getting stonewalled and no answers. We've been trying everything, you know. After my wife figured out how to download this disc, my computer went crazy. My computer wasn't working, and I was on a weekend retreat, and I met a guy named Dave Styler, a veteran, and he mentioned during the weekend he worked on computers, so I called him up, and he tried to fix it from his house with his computer, and he said, you got to bring it down. We took our computer down there. And he opens it up, and he says, oh, my God, Charlie, what they got in here, they didn't even come out with it yet. And the disk was encrypted. It's like 10numbers.gov, 12numbers.cia in Maryland, that place over there. I mean, he's got it all noted and everything. I'm not a computer guy. But that's how we won the first case in America, November 18th. 2013 with Judge Leon and Larry Klayman. Larry Klayman's representing the families. Just so many questions. So that's what we've been battling with. And we just recently had the New York Times here last week, a guy named Serge. And he looked at some of the 1,300 pages. His jaw dropped, Robert. He was like, oh, my God, nobody's talking about this? Well, you know, Obama has a stronghold on the press. So,
well, yeah, that's for certain. And why do you think the Obama administration, this is just, you know, your feeling, your belief, is covering up the incident?
Well, there's so many different questions. The one main question, was it Bin Laden they killed? It wasn't Bin Laden. After the Bin Laden raid, his rating went from, I don't know, 40% up 80. I just want to make it loud and clear to your whole audience. This ain't about Republican or Democrat. This is about 30 men that lost their life, and somebody leaked something to the Taliban. The Taliban, Robert, were bragging a half hour after the helicopter went down. We just killed SEAL teams. How did they know? How did they know who was in the helicopter?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot. Joe Biden, May 3rd at the Ritz-Carlton in Delaware, he mentioned that our elite Navy SEAL team just killed Bin Laden on national TV. Is that why my son started talking about it? Will Leon Panetta, in front of 1,500 people, said, SEAL Team 6 lives over here. The commander lives there.
Yeah.
You know what his answer was? I thought they all had clearance. 1,500 people from Hollywood, and you don't know who else was in the crowd.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, you know, questions. And they knew. The Taliban knew. And was it Bin Laden? Wasn't. was it when my son grabbed me and said, you know, you won't believe what's going on in this country with all the heroin that's coming from Afghanistan here? Was it a trade-off?
Yeah, it's like a lot of people
I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios. I'm not a conspiracy guy. I'm not a political guy. I'm a father that lost his son. I just need it. I need to know why. I need to know. It wasn't like an IED or he got shot by a sniper. This was, from my perspective, this was an established ambush. You know? So.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that. And you're right. There are many who contend that Osama bin Laden wasn't actually killed. And so, you know, some think that there's definitely a possibility or a link between Extortion 17 being, you know, shot down or bombed, or which when the truth comes out, we'll find out what happened there. But some believe it's a cover-up that Osama bin Laden really wasn't taken out as reported. And that brings me up to the next question is, of course, much like speaking of bin Laden, you know, I know you're well aware of the burial at sea that happened really quickly with him. And then also, you know, with doing some research, you know, on your videos and things of that nature, is that they also had the folks who were, you know, shot down all cremated as well. Do you think there's any kind of links between that and the reason why they were cremated?
Robert, they were only the helicopter gave the 3-minute call, and then between the 3-minute call and the 1-minute call, there was a 13-minute lapse, and it's in the paperwork, and they were only 50 feet in the air, and Michael jumped out of the helicopter, which I didn't know until December 2011. I called Dover for the autopsy report, and because when it hit, it was in the newspapers from the Pentagon. Jane Campbell, and the other guy was Lapan, L-A-P-A-N, spokespeople for the Pentagon. It was in the newspapers. All that was left was 38 skulls and 38 sea spines. And so when Keiko was here, casualty assistance officer, you know, they said the helicopter got hit by an RPG. It blew up. It blew up again, and then when it hit the ground, it blew up a third time. It was a fireball. So he was already cremated. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, so we were like, all right, you know, we're out of our tree. And then in December, I call off Dover. They sent me this autopsy report, and my wife, Michael's stepmom, there's a disc with that, and she's like, you're not looking at the disc. It's before Christmas. And I'm reading the autopsy. There's no smoke in his lungs. His spine's okay. I'm like, I said to her, she's looking at the pictures. I said, is it bad? She goes, well. I said, well. And there's my son. The only thing bad about Michael was his ankle. You could see the hair on his skin. You could see him. He was holding a gun, Robert. His hand was stretched out like holding a gun. He was imperfectly intact except for his ankle. He didn't need to be cremated. So when I called up the command about that and the Pentagon, the first question was, how do you know that? And I told them, I said, somebody from Dover sent me this. And that was December 2011. I haven't heard anything back from anybody there. So, yeah, I don't know.
So
I don't know.
Sounds like a lot of questions
that.
Still out there.
Right, right. You know, so...
Is there any kind? Go ahead. Of investigation going on, or is there any other politicians or anyone in Congress that are going to get anything started in any kind of investigation?
Jason Chavez in April this year had we were going to have a hearing. It was on C-SPAN. And 24 of the parents sent in over 1,000 questions. I sent in like 15. And 2 weeks before, it was the parents were going to be able to ask the questions from some of the people from DOD. And 2 weeks before, they said the parents aren't allowed to ask the questions. Why? I don't know. So Congress asked the military people that were there, Gary Reed and a few other people, which weren't even hired until after my son got killed. I don't know what they would know about it, but anyway, that's, you know. So anyway, the only real congressman that did anything was Micah from Florida. He read the reports and he read the parents' questions. The other ones just really danced around it. I got, you know, I thank Jason Chavez from Utah. He got it together. He hit a couple questions, you know. So I was off, you know, I was a little upset with that. And Congressman Bob Brady from Pennsylvania, who's my congressman, and I went to his office, and within 3 weeks he wrote, well, that day he wrote a letter to Department of Defense demanding that Mr. Strange get some answers. And Department of Defense reached out, and April 30th we went down there, and we weren't allowed to bring any other parents with us. We weren't allowed to bring our lawyer with us. It was just me and my wife, and bring our questions. We bring the questions that Gary Reed's there, a colonel, an admiral, and my wife's got all the names written down, but she's not feeling well. And so we give them the questions. They're reading the questions, Robert. And Gary Reed starts to answer, no way the Taliban were bragging over the Internet. They didn't know, da-da-da-da-da, right? So I said, talking. I said, excuse me, did you read the 1,300 pages? And he keeps talking over me, Robert. I said, did you read 1,300 pages? Did you read 1,300 pages? Then I stood up and I used the F word, and that caught his eye. I said, did you read the 1,300 pages? He said, I watched your press conference with Alan West, General Boykin, General Valet, Ace Lyons, and the other families. I watched your press conference down there in Washington. I read the 25-page summary. And I said, the biggest loss of life, and you didn't read the 1,300 pages? And he couldn't answer me. So he said, well, you can't get all your information off the Internet. You can't get all your information off the newspapers. It's me. So I said, here you go, Exhibit 43, sir. And they're like, what? And it says right there, the Taliban was bragging a half hour after my son got killed over the Internet, and it gives their names, Robert, the Taliban's names.
Wow.
They just killed SEAL Team 6. General Colt, in the 1,300 pages, asked one of the guys, what is the assessment of the Tangine Valley where my son got killed? And the guy answers, well, sir, May 10th, 2011, 100 Taliban are coming from the blank Providence to the Tangine Valley to shoot down the Coalition Air Force. They knew. They knew. I mean, I'm not military. This is from the 1,300 pages. Nothing's twisted, nothing at all. You know what I'm saying? And Gary Reed says, oh, no, sir, they didn't know. I said, here you go. It's Exhibit 89. It's right here. I said, you just don't understand. My wife figured out how to download that disk. See, nobody can get the 1,364 pages. You can try down the Department of Defense. I had people, all kinds of people trying to write a book and all that, and I didn't give out the 1,300 pages. And they don't give it out there. And then sometimes it's on the Internet, but they'll only put about 25 pages out. Their story. I have pictures of the helicopter, Robert. It wasn't blown up three times.
You know?
I got a guy named Douglas Century. He's a writer. He's writing a book for us. And it's not so much about this. It's more about my son being from Philadelphia, delivering newspapers, worked at a bar making chicken wings, you know what I mean, at all boys high school, and making the achievements up to SEAL Team 6 to become a team leader. But some of it's going to be at the end. It will be about all the questions. So.
Yeah, and I've got one last question before I bring the panel in. And first we'll start off with Dan Gray. He's the one that gave me the information to give you a contact. For you to come on, and since we do have folks on for the panelists, we have to probably limit to about 6 minutes per panelists before we bring in, you know, some audience members and things of that nature. But the last question is, why do you think the administration is conducting the war in Afghanistan in the manner that they are?
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Sure. Why do you think the Obama administration is conducting the war in Afghanistan in the manner that they are been proceeding?
Why did they change the rules of engagement 3 times in Afghanistan? To favor the Muslim Brotherhood?
Go ahead.
You got me beat. Our guys ain't allowed to shoot until they get shot at. But this is what Obama did. You know what I'm saying? And the rules of engagement favored the Muslim Brotherhood. And our men are getting killed. 12 of our Marines got killed last week. Nobody heard about that. You know, he's not on television. Nobody talks about it. You know, I know there's a lot of, with the White House, from what I hear is, a lot of them, Mr. Obama's a Muslim.
Yeah,
that's
you've heard that a lot, and of course people, right, yeah, we've heard that a lot, and of course there people are shut down, when they say that and ridicule us for thinking that. But, I mean, if you look at the man's actions, I mean, even throughout most of his, presidency, both in the first term and second, there's just a lot of things that he's done that and we've even talked about this on the show, if he's not a Muslim himself, that he definitely has Muslim or Islamic sympathies.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's without a doubt. Like I said, I'm not political. I raised my children in Catholic school, worked hard, took vacations, went fishing with them, goofed around with them, tried to keep up with them. And my son was serving this country, and he went to the most elite team in the world, became a team leader, very proud of my son. And then all of a sudden when they put him with the most elite team in the world, 4 years into it, he's coming home talking about this and the will and grabbing him. You won't believe what's going on in the country. And then you look at the guy's name, Barack Hussein Obama. I mean, it's not Irish. There ain't no Mick in there, brother. You know what I'm saying? It ain't Quinn Mick, So something's, very, I wish I could, I hope we have this hearing. We're still pushing. We didn't give up. Larry Clemens just filed a new FOIA Information Act that I think I sent that over to you.
I'd like to get him on the show at some point as well. Go ahead.
I'll email you his phone number when we get done.
Great.
Larry
will
jump on, sure. New York Times
we'll
is coming,
coming
our way. Yeah, the New York Times, 3.5 hours here, right, last Tuesday. Then Thursday, he was out in Beverly Hills with Larry Klayman. Spent 2 days with Larry. Serge Kowalowski. So out of anybody in the New York Times, I heard this is the guy that might, and for him to even be interested, he came out and said, there's such a stronghold on the media with this administration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
I heard
huge.
A little bit of his on the clips that you sent me. In the videos, I did get an opportunity to watch some of that, and I remember him saying that. But I do see that it's about the bottom of the hour, so if anyone would like to chime in when we open up the call to the audience, and that's 347-945-7428. I do see some callers in. I also see a caller who would like to ask some questions, make some comments, I believe. Actually, from my home state here in Ohio. I think it's a Columbus area code. But first, we will bring in Dan, and then after that, we will bring in Cindy, and then we have James and then Kelly. And so thank you very much, Dan, for calling into the show. How are you tonight?
Well, I hope I'm all right. I got a little bit of a sinus thing here, so if you hear any sneezing, at least you can't catch Ebola over the radio. Charlie, it is
hey,
great to hear you.
Hey, my friend.
You sound
been?
Tired.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Listen, I always, everyone says, Dan, how do you do all this stuff and put in all these hours? And I point to other people who are doing all this stuff and all these hours, and then every one of us points to people, very few people like yourself. I'll tell you what, the single-minded, ferocious devotion that you have shown, you are everywhere. You are not giving up. You are pushing them so damn hard. Mike, your son, clearly got that from you. And I'll tell you what, folks, you want to know what kind of a warrior Charlie's son Michael was. Look at what Charlie is doing. And then imagine a young who is trained in the arts of war and cryptology in the most elite unit. And you, there's no question. Folks, is that what it's going to take for you guys to step up and start getting active? We're not asking you to put in 140-hour weeks. We're not asking you to travel all over the place. But are you going to have to lose a family member? Is a tragedy going to have to happen before you get motivated enough? If they can do this, what they did to a SEAL team, that the there is no question in the world that there's nobody more elite. It's possible that maybe the Russian special forces, maybe the Israeli special forces might, on a good day, come close to our SEAL teams in terms of excellence. But they can do this to an American SEAL team and get away with it. What chance do you think you've got? The only chance we've got, which is to fight together now. When the SEAL team went down in Afghanistan in that valley, they were alone. They were alone and abandoned and betrayed by their own higher-ups, the people that we allowed to lead our military. But they're not alone because we're still fighting for them. They fought for us. If we fight together, we can really do something. Charlie, I'm looking forward to seeing you in person in Bethel. This is I know there's a nationwide audience and all on the show, but if you're in Pennsylvania, Charlie's all over in my neck of the woods. He's going to be down in Bethel in September on the 10th, the day before 9/11, and there should be some really, really great local Pennsylvania, eastern and central Pennsylvania people there to help out. Charlie, would you tell us more about Clayman's, that the lawyer, that his Freedom Watch lawsuit where he's actually suing all these people for money for this? I mean, not that the money is for you, it's for the foundation. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, Larry's a great man. I've been to Washington 17 times. Larry's flown there every time, him and his assistant, Dina. And he's actually the only president in the U.S. to sue a United States president and win. He sued Bill Clinton and won. And Larry's got
That's
a
awesome.
Sense of humor, too. He subpoenaed Bill Clinton's penis. Am I allowed to say that?
Well,
yeah, that's
you
the
know
scientific words. So we're all good.
The only problem with serving a subpoena on Bill Clinton's penis is when you serve a subpoena, you have to have a process server actually deliver it in person, and that little member is very, very hard to track down. It could be in anywhere. You know, I'm not going any further. I'll just shut up and give it back to Charlie here.
You're not part of Logic After Dark yet, Dan.
Go ahead, Charlie.
He just filed a new FOIA Act with the NSA. They're trying to push it into a lower court. Of course, we won with Judge Leon, and I'm trying to pull it up here to send it over to you. He, you know, we won twice with the NSA, November 18th last year with Judge Leon. They appealed it. Their lawyer was Mr. Gilligan. They bought 9 lawyers from the Obama administration and the NSA against Larry. And we won both cases. Now it's supposed to go to the Superior Court, and they're trying to file it into Obama was on television December 2013 before he went on another vacation. Talking about it, how he's going to try to change the NSA and everything like that. We filed against Karzai, that corrupt son of a gun, and bring him in on some things. He's so corrupt, everybody knows how corrupt Karzai is. The Afghan administration, the Taliban government, they have their own government with a building with a flag, believe that or not. So he filed a lot of different things. The main thing is what he's trying to do is stop the money going over there. We send billions of dollars to them people. I've talked to people that have been over there, skids full of money going to them people. They come in and steal stuff at night. You know what they say? Just order more.
You know what, Charlie?
So Larry's filed all kinds of cases there. And
you bring up an interesting point and something I want to remind all the listeners about. Now, look, Obama, and not just Obama, but his entire administration, Valerie Jarrett, who is a family of the Muslim Brotherhood, what's her name, Huma Abedin, Clinton's body woman, that's Hillary Clinton, another Muslim Brotherhood character, and I'm not making this stuff up. This is not conspiracy. This is documented fact. Even the mainstream press has reported on it grudgingly, occasionally on the back pages. But he usually ignores us patriots. We do something, and he just laughs it off, and he doesn't worry too much about it, because what we're doing is making a lot of noise. Maybe we're waking some folks up, but we're not really exposing. There, I just got your email, Charlie. Thanks. We're not really exposing anything that's going to be very damaging. But there are certain things that he's fighting really, really hard, and he's fighting SEAL Team 6 Gold Star families from getting the truth really, really hard. 9 lawyers going to court over and over again, putting bugs, top-level U.S. government bugs in Charlie's house when he is a domestic U.S. citizen, has nothing to do with foreign policy. He's the anti-terrorist. His kid was an anti-terrorist. And they're doing this for a reason. Now, you think about what the SEAL teams do. They don't go and topple governments. They're very small teams. They're the point of the spear. And what they do is they go in an operation where there's a most vulnerable spot, where there's leverage, where just getting that one spot is going to make a big change overall, like taking out a bin Laden, okay? That is why I'm urging people to get involved with Charlie's Michael Strange Foundation for. It's not just that it's right. I mean, it is right, and I would say get involved just for that reason. But it's more than right. It's a winner because it's going to help expose something much, much, much deeper. Why do you think Benghazi happened? Is it the crime of the men, our ambassador, and those SEALs who died in Benghazi? Oh, absolutely. And that is a tragedy and a travesty. But it's more than that. There's something behind that, which is why they're covering it up so fast and furiously. Another one. So whenever we've got them on the defensive, whenever there's something they don't dare have come out, that's where we need to put our effort. Now, I'm not going to speculate and before I turn it back over to you, Robert, because I know time is a factor here, on exactly what I think Obama's up to. We've touched on the fact that there's a lot of Muslim influence, and Charlie just mentioned there's a lot of money going over there to the wrong people, and it's clear that we've been arming ISIS. I will not call them ISIL. They're not in charge of the Levant. They are a terrorist force that cuts the heads off of children. This is not made up or conspiracy. But what I will tell you is that logic dictates that we seek patterns. So you look for patterns. Now, that doesn't mean they're true. Once you find a particular pattern based on pieces of evidence, you look for things that other facts that either confirm your pattern or that tell you your pattern's off. It's like filling in a crossword puzzle. Maybe you've got it right partly, but not completely. So I'm not going to leap to all kinds of conclusions here, but I will say when we look at Benghazi, we look at Fast and Furious, we look at especially Extortion 17 and what happened to Michael and his men, this tells us there's something extremely sensitive and vulnerable on the other side that they don't dare have come out. And I want it out. And I want it out before the next elections, and I want to see all of these people repudiated and kicked out of office who supported it, and I want to see people in orange jumpsuits wearing chains doing the perp walk into federal court, and I want to see them spent breaking rocks in Leavenworth for the rest of their life for what they did to Michael and those other good men. And with that, I have to turn it back to you, Robert.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you very much, Dan, and thank you very much for giving me the information to bring Mr. Strange on tonight. Go ahead, Charles, and then we're going to bring in Cindy. So, Cindy, we'll bring you on in a second. Go ahead, Mr. Strang, or Charles.
Go ahead, Charles.
Dan hit it right on the nose. There's something up. I mean, you know, the biggest loss of life, 30 guys, and what was on the air a few times, a couple minutes here, a couple there. SEAL Team 6 called the best warriors. And this, I'm not saying this because it was my son. They weren't the best of the best. They were the best we have. And no questions asked. General Cole, in the investigation, when we were there October 12, 2011, you know what he actually had the balls to say? It was a lucky shot.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that's a very bad way of putting that.
I stood up. "You playing? Are you talking about basketball? All our sons are dead." And then they had to grab me again. You know what I mean? Like, you got to be kidding. My son gets killed, and you're going to call it a lucky shot? 200 yards with an RPG.
Hey. Hey, I want to say one thing out there also. This is a local parochial thing about, there's a lot of people in the Patriot movement, the Liberty movement, who live rural. I'm up in the rural areas in Pennsylvania now. I'm away from some of the big cities, but I'm from Philly, and I want you to listen to Charlie Strange, and he said, you hear that accent? That's Philadelphia. Don't think that the big cities are lost, and don't think that you got to have a southern accent or you got to be from the middle of nowhere to be a patriot. There's patriots in every walk of life, in every place in this country. We surround the statists and the Islamo-fascists. There's more of us than there are of them. Now, they may have a stranglehold on the governments in some of these big cities, but the vast majority of the people feel exactly the way that Charlie and I do and the way that you do. We want the truth, we want our liberty, and we're tired of all this corruption. They're selling us out.
And with that, Dan, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Cindy. Thank you very much for calling into the show, Cindy. And then I've got James and Kelly, and then we'll bring up the lines for the audience members. Thank you, Cindy, for calling to the show. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Can you hear me?
Great to hear from you.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay? Because I really don't know if my setup – I've got something new going on here, and I'm not sure if my setup's working right.
You're loud and clear.
Okay. Well, hi, everybody. Glad to see you all. And Mr. Strange, I'm so sorry for your loss, and I offer my condolences. And I just want you to know that there are those of us out here. In fact, there's a lot of us out here that appreciate the job that your son and others are doing out there and the fact that they have risked their lives for us. And it makes us maybe not as sick as you are about it, because it was your own son. There's no way that we can feel a personal loss like that as deeply as you do. But we definitely feel your loss, and we are just as – we're pulling our hair out too. You know, Robert, I don't know if I ever told you this before, but your song, your opening song always gets me going, and I just want you to know that – I am standing shoulder to shoulder with you guys, and we are fighting for our lives. First of all, I didn't even know they used Chinook helicopters anymore for anything but transport, so that's kind of strange. I don't know. But anyway, I think Obama is actually favoring a particular brand of Islam. I think the Muslim Brotherhood is his preferred brand. And the reason you see him doing things sometimes that seem to be anti-Muslim or against Muslims is because it's just the wrong Muslims. And I don't know why, as much as I watched that Dinesh D'Souza movie, the first one, and in that he makes the case that Obama really has no religious belief in his heart at all. It's just that he has family ties, and he has been basically somewhat brainwashed into thinking he has to hate colonialism and anybody in America or anybody in Israel, because that's what the people who brought him up and mentored him That's what they taught him to believe. So that's my idea. You know, if I was the president of the United States, I'll tell you what my foreign policy would be. I would take every troop out of all of the Arab nations that have asked us, that have people there that want us out. I would just leave out. I would take that hundreds of billions of dollars that we waste on them, and I would put me a nice, big, sizable base, United States Air Force base, naval, whatever you want to put there. I'd get myself a nice, big base in Israel, and I'd put all my money into protecting Israel, and I would let those people fight it out themselves, because you know what? All through the centuries, one of the things that has stopped them from their momentum is that they fight each other. And if we just let them alone and let them fight each other and just protect Israel, I think we would pretty much get rid of them. I don't think they'd be that much dangerous. And I would allow Israel to stop Iran's nuclear program. I would give them every help and every weapon they needed, airspace, whatever.
I love what Israel says. You kill one of our guys, we're going to kill 100 of yours. That's we should have that tattooed on our soldiers. You know, let people know. You mess with America. You know, I got a former Marine standing right here next to me. He served. He's also a Gold Star father. His son, Nick Uzinski, was killed 1/11/2010 in Afghanistan. Hey, Bill, let's everybody say hi to Bill. Let Bill say a few words about the rules of engagement. He was actually over there.
I wanted to ask about that because I wanted to know exactly what it is they changed and what you want, what the families want to get changed back. That was one of my questions for you.
Well, the rules of engagement got changed during the Bush administration, too. But during the Obama administration, they've been changed so heavily three times, and it's printed, it's documented. You're not allowed to put handcuffs on Taliban. You're not allowed to shoot anywhere into a building. Even though the Taliban are shooting out, you're not allowed to shoot back in. I was just with a Navy SEAL named Drago. He just got out 2010, and he's got a tape recorder. They killed a few Al-Qaeda, and the rest ran into a building. They weren't allowed to go in the building, so Drago, on a tape recorder, has... Hey, Mr. He's from Poland, Drago, but he's American. He says, "Hey, Mr. Terrorist, we're out here. You know the rules of engagement. We can't come in. Hey, Mr. Terrorist, are you coming out to go to our prison, or what are we going to do? You know." That's how bad it is.
Wow.
Uh-huh. That's wow. Under this administration.
What exactly was it that happened that night? Now, I know that there were some Rangers in there before, some Apaches and all in there, and that's the one reason why it was so dangerous for that Chinook to be coming in there, because everyone was still on high, was already on high alert, had been for like 3 hours, and so they knew what was going on. They knew what was going on, and so there was no element of surprise whatsoever. So what was it that they were not allowed to do? Is there anything that the people on that Chinook helicopter could have done to protect themselves if it hadn't been for the change in the rules of engagement?
Well, sure. In my 1,300 pages, they see the guys on that tower and Taliban coming in and out and carrying guns, and the guy asked to fire, and he was denied. And it says it over and over in the 1,300 pages. They've seen 20 to 30 Taliban under the tree with the motorcycles, cell phones, RPGs, AK-47s, night vision goggles. It's all in the 1,300 pages. They weren't allowed to shoot them because there could have been a farmer there.
Yeah. Okay, well, all right. Daryl Issa was making some inquiries. He was supposedly the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee looking into it. And then Freedom Watch had filed a suit to get the information. The information that they wanted, was that Colt's 1,300 pages? Is that how that got released?
No, they won't release everything. That's what we're keep filing to get the information for.
Okay.
1,300 pages, 1,364. They'll give you a little bit here, a little bit there, and then they changed the scenario because it says the Rangers were in no danger. There was 43 Rangers there for 3.5 hours in a few gunfights, and they actually caught 7 of the Taliban and had them. And when the Chinook was coming in, all of a sudden somebody ordered the AC-130 and the, I forget the name of the other helicopter. But anyway, moved them away. And it says in the paperwork, sir, we never seen an operation like this before. General Colt asked another guy. He said, sir, this is the first time we ever released IRF. Immediate Reaction Force, SEAL Team 6. What, you know, who gave the orders? Who, you know, and
I
want to
just step in
Pennsylvania Avenue.
Real quick, just to let everybody know in the audience, what
quick,
an AC-130
is. And then we're going to be bringing James in. Go ahead, Dan.
All right, this is a point of information because there's a lot of terms out there people may not know. AC-130 was a helicopter. It's not a helicopter. This is a large cargo ship that's been outfitted with machine guns and cannons. They used to call it Puff the Magic Dragon in its previous incarnation back in Vietnam. This sucker cruises along at a reasonably low altitude and basically puts a bullet per inch or a bomb per foot. So if there is a massive bunch of fighters who are getting ready to attack our guys, who are attacking our guys, this thing flies over once, and there's nothing left but hamburger, and they move that out of the area.
Right.
Well, you know, General Colt, it seems like he did a lot of investigating, and he found out a lot of stuff, and then all of a sudden, it's not his job to find out who's at fault somehow, and that he's not, it's not his job to do anything about it after he's gotten his information. And then lo and behold, he's promoted to Major General. He's got a promotion and his mouth is shut now. Who else will be shut up, and how are they going to do it?
Right. General Colt, after the investigation, got promoted. Also, August 2011, after my son got killed, was the biggest chain of command in the history of America. Eric Olson, Admiral Eric Olson, left 2 days later. Miller, 4-star, left. General David Petraeus, 10 days after my son gets killed. And then they make him then Benghazi. And then General Votel, the names go on. They're you know, it's all that month. So their answer for that was, oh, we always do it in August. They lie right to your face, and what are you going to do, Mr. Strange? You know, so I got Larry Klayman, the Bulldog. I got people like you. And then Robert and Dan and Brian Lang and Mike Savage and Alex Jones, and hopefully this New York Times guy put something in there. He's supposed to come down to do a picture, a couple pictures this week. The book, a couple other things, you know. So what do? I do the MichaelStrangeFoundation.org. I hope everybody checks out our retreat video. It's only 3 minutes. You know, that's what I do. I got a gold star dad here with me now. We have a big retreat October 10th to the 12th. I'm bringing in 30 gold star parents with a paid grief counselor just to help out. And you're not supposed to bury your children. And we need help and we need support. We have PayPal on the MichaelStrangeFoundation.org. You know, so that's what I do. I try to do what my son did, I guess, help others, and I got grandkids, and I got to keep trying to go on. One Gold Star family member a week dies, you know, from this war, and we need everybody in America. We need more people like you guys to step up and keep following questions. Call your congressman. School for 17.
Well, there's an Army Ranger.
Real quick, and hopefully we can bring it back, but I do want to be able to bring everyone in,
okay,
including some audience folks, Cindy.
All
so
right.
At this point, I do want to bring in James. James on the line, he's the founder of Overpasses for America. And thank you very much, James, for calling to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Robert. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing good. Thank you.
Well, Charles, we meet again. I've been on with you several times on mostly Brian's show, Live Truth Radio, and I guess we've been on a few others as well. It's good to run into you again. How are you doing?
Ah, thank you, my friend, man. I love Overpasses for America. You guys were... I put them all over my Facebook page, the foundation page, you know, and I say the word, too, Extortion 17. People go, what? And then I say, them 30 guys that got killed in August? They go, oh, yeah. And then they all say, why did they put them all in a Chinook? Why did they put them all in one helicopter? I said, that's what I'm trying to find out.
Oh, no, and it's just, you know, it's, I don't know, I don't think we would have ever seen, I don't think we would have ever seen any other president do the complete lack of oversight. You know, it's intentional, it's stonewalling. And, but what exactly, do you know, what was the objective in that, well, that particular location that they were after? I mean, obviously they have Rangers there ahead of time. Had other support there ahead of time that then left. What were they after that was so important on that hill or where, you know?
First it was a rescue mission for the Rangers. That's what's in the newspapers. Then a few days later, it was they were after Quarry Tahir, also known as Objective Lefty Grove. Quarry Tahir, who was a high-level mark. Quarry Tahir also knew SEAL Team 6 was coming because he moved to a different village the day before. It's in the paperwork. Him and a bunch of them other scumbags, I got their names, they knew. They moved to a different village. They knew who was coming. They were part of, they were in on it too. I don't know how much money they got, but or what went on, or was it a trade, or, you know, but how did they know? How did they know to move to another village? Because the Rangers went there, and they were gone. And then one of the locals said, Quarry Tahir and his buddies moved to another place. So, yeah, that's a big question.
Well, it's always a shame to see things like this happen. I mean, just American soldiers' blood spilled for nothing. And, that's not what we're supposed to do as Americans. Our government's not supposed to do that, you know. I mean, you know, we've been places that, you know, the reasoning has been that for being there has been very questionable. And, you know, especially in this, you know, on, you know, August 6th, that was very questionable. You know, issue as to why they were there and how they got there. You know, the whole, whoever is responsible for it, I don't care who it is, they need to be held accountable to, you know, by the law. And that's what it boils down to, is they need to be. And we just, you know, we can't stop pressuring Congress to do something about it, because we need the answers. We need the truth. And it's... I don't know. I hope we can help keep the name out there, the words out there enough where people keep wondering what it is.
Right. Right. We don't want this to happen to another person's family, another mom and dad, another brother and sister, another grandma and grandfather, another friend. One soldier dies, right? They all had a mom and dad. They all had a grandma and grandpa. They all had four brothers and sisters, three brothers and sisters. They all had probably six close friends. They all were in a platoon with probably about 50,000. It comes to one soldier dies affects 297,000. So, and we lost over 7,000. Out of 7,000, we lost in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know. And we need people to wake up, and we need people to know what's going on, man. And we need your support. We need thank you for the overpass. I can't thank you enough. And Robert and Dan and Cindy and, you know, Brian and Mary and Bob and, you know, you a lot of people know, but the other thing is getting everybody together at one time to go down mm-hmm. to Pennsylvania Avenue and make a statement.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, that's no. Okay. But
I was thinking no.
I do. That's good. I just see it's the top of the hour, so I do want to bring a couple audience members in soon. But first, before we do that, I want to get in Kelly, and then we'll bring it back to you, James, see if there's anything else you want to add or another question you want to add. But I did want to bring Kelly back on the line. So, Kelly, we'll have James finish up, and then we'll bring you on. Okay, Kelly, and thanks for coming to the show.
Well, hey, hey, y'all. I'm calling here from FEMA Region 9. I'm sorry, burning FEMA Region 9, which is Northern California, and we've got the earthquakes in the south. And anyway, we got terrible, terrible fires and won't be put out till the winter. So you're going to see some beautiful sunsets because of this. But I want to start out, Charlie, with my absolute condolences.
Thank you.
This is really, I just, and I'm sorry I didn't catch all the details at the beginning because my son called me. Of course, family first. He's 8, first day of school. If I lost him, I would just turn upside down. You know, and sometimes some days I wonder he's the reason I'm living. You know, I sometimes wonder that because well, he's getting the first marriage, wife left, but he's still there. He's doing great. You know, to see somebody grow and do really well and make friends and do well in you know third grade, second grade football. It's such a joy, but to have that, I'm just so sorry to hear about your loss. I wanted to, you know, there's questions brought up, you know, in a Chinook, really? And then there's, I don't think they had Apache supporting both of them. You didn't separate them. The SEAL team, you had the C-130 gunship was pulled. So that's what I'm hearing, and I want to ask you a couple questions, but first I wanted to ask, I'll make this statement. I had this buddy named Ray. He was in the Marines. He was in Iraq number one with some missile crew. And he learned about what's really going on in the world and the corruption. And he was telling me things and kind of helping me wake up at the same time. We were waking up together to what's really going on in the world. But he said, you know, it's the strangest thing. Some people start complaining, and he had friends in the military telling him, you know, some things were going on because he was out. So Ray was telling me, the strangest thing, when somebody starts questioning orders or they discover corruption somewhere in the military or government, whatever, they seem to just put them all together in a helicopter, and the helicopter crashes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you probably heard this before, but I'm just like hearing your story. I'm just like, really? Again? I mean, that's my suspicion anyway. You know, you're talking about the Taliban knew this. Some key targets were alerted ahead of time. How did they get that information? Obama, Cindy was mentioning he has a bias. You got these stupid rules of engagement. I'm kind of summarizing quickly. But I wanted to ask you a question. While I was off talking to my son, did your son know some things that he shouldn't have? When I say shouldn't have, I mean... did he know things that may have put him in a life-threatening position?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe Michael was, you know, with the cryptology, the code breaking, and being raised in the, you know, the city of Philadelphia here, and with the neighborhood kids and his brothers and his brother and his sisters, and he was, you know, Michael was always for the underdog and always helped out, and then probably to see the corruption that was going on in this country, because he grabbed me for the first time, my friend. And he said, "Dad, you wouldn't believe what's going on in this country." For him to make a statement like that, he never talked about what he did. They gave Michael a lie detector test every 2 months. You know what the first
Tuesday
question was?
The military?
Excuse me?
The military did?
Yes. And you know what the first question was? When was the last time you lied? A loaded question. Me and Michael would go out to eat. And I'd be trying to get stuff out of him, and he'd look over and he goes, "Dad, you know who them two people are over there?" I say, "It's the husband and wife." He goes, "That's what you think." Oh, Michael was in deep, and he took on a lot of responsibility. He was 25, and now in hindsight and looking and things that he got, he loved the brotherhood, he loved his friends, you know, them guys all live close together, they all have barbecues with their families, then they go and kill the people that are trying to kill us in this country. You know what I mean? And because I told him to get out. I said, "Stop. Don't go back, Mike." And I'm going to start to lose it. And and he trusted some of the wrong people, which is apparently, you know, and, you know, 93 days after whatever happened with Bin Laden, my son gets killed, the biggest loss of life in the history of Iraq and Afghanistan, the history of America, 22 guys from
Charlie
group, Naval Special War.
Charlie, I just want to say one thing, which is...
Dan, hold on here.
Go ahead.
So, Charlie, did some of the other SEALs know about this? I mean, I'm sure they talked about amongst themselves. I mean, SEALs, by the way, they don't hand out SEAL certificates. It is insane, the training. I knew one, and it was just unbelievable. Anyway, but if they were working together, they probably saw some of the same things. Do you think it's possible that some of the other SEAL members in the Chinook also knew what your son knew?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One kid called home, clear out your social media, Billy and Karen's son, Aaron. Another guy put a will in a freezer. Another guy used to kiss his dad on top of the forehead. This time he looks him in the eyes and thanks him for, you know, taking him to football and thank you for the way you raised me. He used to say, "Yo, Dad, don't drink all the beer. I'll see you in 3 months." This time he says goodbye that way. Another guy had his whole family come down and his grandparents. Never did that before. So they knew somebody was, they just didn't know how high up it was. And then my question is, and maybe you guys can help me, how did they get them in a Chinook helicopter? They had to be telling them they were going somewhere else. You know what I mean?
They
and then no one over there, they must have said, where's because the guy that was flying, God bless him, he was going off a Google map. So he wasn't, and I'm friends with the pilot's mom and dad, God bless them. They're suffering the way I am, and you know, all the Gold Star parents. But how did they get them guys in there?
And then here's another question for you. So had this team had worked together before, right? Or
sure.
Did they throw in some other additional people from all over the country into the Chinook?
Yeah, it was 22 guys from the dev group. They weren't all SEAL Team 6, but they're all SEALs, the 22 of them. Like, well, Michael was from the dev group. What makes SEAL Team 6 is the best Navy SEALs and the best guys from the dev group to make SEAL Team 6. Michael was never went through butts. He didn't get the trident. They're giving him a trident, of course. And some other stuff going on. The Navy SEAL Foundation sent me some letters. He was 2% body fat. The SEALs would say to him, "Why don't you go through buds?" He goes, "Why don't you become a cryptologist?" And the truth of the matter is, Michael never had a chance to go through buds. They always had him doing, I called him my James Bond guy, doing his stuff with his crew. They usually went out 4 to 6 guys. on what they did and some of the things they did here in this country, which I can't say no more about.
Yeah, well, I'll bet you if you talk to some of the other parents, that their sons, if daughters too, knew something that they shouldn't have. I'll bet that will be a common thread. Yeah, I'll put about a 70% probability, but it's just from what my buddy said. He said, people know too much, or they start questioning instead of blinding follow orders. They end up on a helicopter, and then it's another training exercise that would crash.
Yep.
Kelly, do you mind if I just say one thing?
Go ahead, Dan, and then I want to bring James back in because we only have 20 minutes for Charlie to stay. And I mean, if he could stay longer, that'd be great. And then we did have a couple, some callers in who would like to chime in, but it looks like their calls have dropped. Unfortunately, I don't know what's on with that. But one was from Ohio, so I was really looking forward to hearing from a fellow Buckeye. But we'll see how it goes. Go ahead, Dan, and then we'll bring James back in. So go ahead.
Yeah, those callers should call back in. Don't let Bob the NSA guy get you down. Listen, Charlie's son and all those other sons and daughters who fought, they sacrificed themselves. They sign a blank check. They're supposed to be, if they're sacrificed, if they pass, they're supposed to be sacrificing on the altar of liberty, fighting for our freedoms, for our safety. And that would be a tragedy. That would be something to mourn. But I don't think Charlie would have a hard time accepting it any more than the rest of us would, because those men and women did sign that blank check, just like so many before them, that gave us America the way we used to have it, the way we should have it, the way we're bringing it back. But these men were sacrificed on the altar of statist expediency. They were betrayed. They did not die for the cause of American liberty, American exceptionalism. They died for Obama's cover-up, for we don't know exactly what, and they won't tell us exactly what. And when I ask a question of somebody who's in power and they're not willing to tell us, I tell them publicly, we assume the worst. There's no reason why we should give you a pass and assume that it's completely innocent, because you're not answering questions. And if it was completely innocent, you'd be answering those questions. So I assume the worst. I assume there's something so big that it would blow half of the Senate that people would no longer vote for the party in power at all, something that would guarantee that the next president would not be a Democrat or a rhino, but would be a liberty candidate from any party. And that's what they're afraid of. That's why we have to fight so hard to get the truth in this matter, because I think this truth is going to be something bigger than you can even imagine. Go ahead, Robert.
And then, James, I did want to make sure we got some more time with you before I brought Kelly in, because I wanted to hurry up and get all the panelists in and bring on our audience members. Which, you know, hopefully, like to call back at 347-945-7428 if you have any comments or questions for our guest tonight. Again, it's 347-945-7428. And so while we're waiting on that, we'll go ahead and bring it back to you, James.
Well, you know, it's I want to preface really what I'm about to say is I'm not one that's prone to conspiracies, but we live in interesting times right now, and we have, for the era we live in, I think we have an inordinate amount of conspiracies compared to previous times in American history. What I have always found odd, and it's led to my theory on what exactly happened on August 6th, was actually the prelude to that, and that was the killing of bin Laden, as they've called it. There were never any pictures of the body. There were never, very many accounts of it. You know, there was, that book, that one book, but it sounded to me like the official story.
Is he even dead?
And it makes me wonder, they weren't ordered to not say something, but nobody in the team was happy about it amongst themselves, and that's why they were targeted. Because they knew who they really killed, or didn't at least know they did, who they didn't kill when they did that raid on that compound in, you know, on Bin Laden's compound. You know, what if it wasn't him, but they were ordered to say that it was.
And is it, or could it be a green on blue association assassination?
I'm sorry, say what?
Or it could be a green on blue assassination. The SEAL team was outed by Obama on purpose. Why? Why did he make them a target?
Because they would be the only witnesses to who was really killed
right.
in the Bin Laden compound, and that's why he would target them. That's what I think was going on. They're the witnesses of what really happened, and what was put out, the official story, is not what really happened.
You know what happened to
the
Bin Laden
file? I mean, look how fast they you know, buried Obama, Osama bin Laden out at sea. I mean, that always smelled a suspicion.
Robert, Charlie wanted
happened
to say something.
Do you know what happened
ahead,
to the Bin Laden? Do you know what happened to the Bin Laden file?
No.
Shredded, I'm sure.
Public record. Day before it was supposed to be public record, it went into the CIA, the same place where the Kennedy assassination is. It can't be open for 60 years.
Wow.
The day before. Yep. I wonder why, you know.
Because they got to protect everybody.
Right.
They got to protect everybody involved.
Why is the NSA coming to my computer? The NSA took a picture of my wife a few months ago. It was on all the local television stations here. We don't have a webcam. We don't have no cameras on our computer. They came right through the wires. And she was ready to play some game on the computer, and all of a sudden I hear her screaming. I come running out of bed. What's the matter? She goes, look, my picture's there. He just took my picture.
Wow, that's gonna be freaky.
And then when the TV people came from the local television stations here, the camera guys go, well, I'm pretty good at computers. Can I take a look at it? Take a look at it all you want. And they would look for a couple minutes. They go, oh my God. They came right through the wires and took her picture.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay.
Real quick, folks, Dan, I think you're wanting to chime in on a comment.
I wanted to make sure that Charlie had a chance. It's really difficult on the radio, folks, when we're not seeing each other and we don't have an engineer who has, top-notch studio capacity, and I'm hoping that changes soon. Robert's show has been getting great guests and great callers and great issues, and, you know, while we're asking about funding and all the rest of this stuff, I'm not in charge of any of that stuff. Please keep me away from that. I'm not a money guy or a numbers guy. But we want to see more professional viewings. A friend of mine the other week from Philly, I think you know him, Charlie, Justin Emmerich, put out a response to Mayor Bloomberg on the gun control issue. And this guy is a kid, just younger than Michael would have been in his 20s. But he invested his own money, thousands of dollars, to get a professional video set up. And it makes a difference. So when you hear us talking over each other, we're not trying to be rude, but it's really difficult because we can't see each other. Now, the NSA, on the other hand, I'm really pissed off at them. Bob, you, the NSA guy, you could do us a favor and try and help us out here. We know that a lot of you are on our side, just like the SEAL teams. You signed up. You took an oath. You're supposed to do your jobs. Most of you are patriots. You don't like your bosses. You know your bosses are no damn good. Remember, the secrecy oath and the oath to follow orders doesn't take precedence over the oath to do what's right by the Constitution and what's right by the American people. Your mothers, your fathers, your brothers and sisters, your wives and children, Bob, you need to do this, and you need to help us out. By the way, folks, if you ever lose your password to something online or you can't remember something that you need, Bob knows. Just ask Bob. Bob will be happy to share it with you.
You're right. Just call Bob.
And not this Bob, the host of the show, a different Bob. Bob the NSA guy.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
Well, we probably should tell our guest who Bob is.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was alluding to him. There's a lot of young men and women who have gone into service of this country. Not all of them fight in the military. Not all of them go through BUDS training or become cryptologists or fly helicopters. There's a lot of unsung heroes, people who are police officers and firefighters who don't carry weapons at all. Firefighters don't. Ambulance people and EMTs. There's people out there who do all kinds of volunteer work and just help out. And I want to remind all of you that your oath, the oath that you all take, or if you're not part of a government agency where you have to take the oath, get two people as witnesses and read it out loud. If you mean it, you've taken the oath. That oath is to the Constitution of the United States that is the, if we follow it, is the only thing that guarantees us a free and open government. What Michael and all those young men were fighting for is something we don't even have here, all right? So I'm reminding all you guys who are, and ladies who are in service of this country, whether it's a local municipality or something way high up, you've got a duty, and your duty is not just to your family by providing a paycheck. And it's not just to following orders of your idiot boss, and you know your boss is an idiot. Come on. It's to us, because we are you. So Bob, the NSA guy, is the guy who pays attention. When you notice that things aren't working right on your computer, just at the time when things start to get really happening, when you start making connections, when you start finding out the truth, when you start sharing that truth, we say that's Bob, the NSA guy. By the way, the technology that they used to take pictures of Charlie's wife when she was at home, when there isn't even a webcam, that technology is available. But I also want to remind our listeners that that technology is extremely expensive and has to be targeted. So my solution to that is that we need to hit them so hard everywhere that they don't know which way is up. Now, I know that, and I'm not paranoid about it, and I don't even care. They're probably watching me and James Neighbors, who's extremely, you know, influential with the overpasses. They're definitely watching Charlie and Cindy and Robert and Kelly. They're watching us because we're making trouble, because we're making waves. Well, I'm saying let them watch you too. You know they're going to do it anyway. You're on camera 200 times a day just going to work and back. Do something. Start speaking out. I got my Twitter page thing up here. I'm looking at all these thousands and thousands of people who not only have a page and look at stuff and make cute little comments, but who have conservative or libertarian or media bias or pro-life or pro-2A, Second Amendment, whatever it is. They put it out there. And when they put it out there, that adds them to the list. Folks, you're already on the list. If you're listening to this show, you're probably already on the list. And by the way, anyone who just tunes in and says, well, I'm not active in anything, I'm not on any list. Look what happens when state governments get too much control. When the government becomes too powerful and they run out of people on their list of enemies, they look for other people who just might become enemies. And then they also pick people who are their friends just to make a point and keep everybody on their toes. There was nobody safe in Stalinist Russia. There's nobody safe in Maoist China. There's nobody safe in Idi Amin's Uganda. And there's nobody safe today in North Korea. I'll tell you what, America's heading down that path, calling for all the people out there to step up and do what they can do. Some of you have knowledge. And what I'm looking for here in specific, all those military dischargees, all those majors and above who know something, who got kicked out of the service, people who are career military, people who know things and are good officers who have served their men and who have served this country, and now you're kicked to the curb. Well, if you know something, you're taking an extra risk. Maybe you're risking your pension. Maybe the NSA is going to start bothering you. But you think you're safe? You're not safe, and you know it. You've got to step forward. What's going to break this story loose is when somebody on the inside comes forward. That's what broke Watergate loose. That's what breaks everything loose, is when somebody starts talking. So far, they've been able to keep everybody quiet. That can't continue forever. And we've got people like Snowden who came out of the NSA and started talking. I want to see more of that. I want to see more of that, because our enemies are not as the foreign enemies, I'm not worried that much about the Muslim extremists. Okay, we'll deal with them. I'm not worried about Putin's Russia or Chinese communism. I'm worried, yes, but we can deal with them. The only way we're going to be able to deal with them is if we have liberty here in this country, which makes us incredibly strong, incredibly righteous, impossible to defeat, so creative, so prosperous. That's what wins. And that's what worries me right now. Before we can tackle any of these outside problems that the NSA was supposedly dealing with, we've got to tackle the problems we've got on the inside. So, Bob, step up.
I got an idea.
Yeah?
I think we ought to all get together. I think we ought to all get together and buy a full-page ad in Washington Times, Washington Post, and say, people who work in Washington, you know what Obama's doing. Somebody in there knows what you're doing. How about coming out and telling us about it? Give us the truth. Come on. We dare you.
Eventually they are going to step to the plate. You know what I mean? Snowden's lawyer was there November 18th when we won the first case with Judge Leon, and he's been talking with Larry Klayman and try to get more of this out. I got a Gold Star father here, my friend Billy. I got to get him down talking to him. Robert, I can't thank you guys enough for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Charles?
Yes.
It's Kelly here.
Hey.
Robert, go ahead and give him my contact information, even my phone number.
Okay.
Because I've come a long way.
I'll send an email.
Yeah, I've come a long way regarding the grand jury, and I think the grand jury, well, the grand jury, its power is to subpoena nationwide, and then they can issue a presentment, and it gets filed in open court for public to see.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll forward it in an email.
That'd be great.
Go ahead and do that, Robert. And thanks again, Charles.
Hey, Charlie.
Thank you, guys.
Is your friend the other father there? Does he want to come on for a couple of minutes and say hello, talk about anything?
Hold on.
Hey, Phil, they want you on for a couple of minutes, talk about a few things?
Sure.
Awesome.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Here comes Bill Uzinski.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Bill
Uzinski, welcome.
Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Bill, you want to tell us about your son and the sacrifice that your family made for America?
Yes, sir. My son, he was a Marine, served with 3rd Recon. He was killed January 11th, 12 days into his 21st year. He loved this country. He can't be more proud of him. His goal, was to, he left college. He was doing really well in college, and he left college because he just felt a calling, to protect our nation. And he was, he joined the Marine Corps under President Bush, and he was upset when President Obama took office. But he still, he still wanted to do his duty, and unfortunately, the country let him down like so many of the other families out there. We weren't there for him, and it's just like we're not there for Charlie and the rest of Extortion 17, and it's got to stop. We have, I heard the rules of engagement being talked about, and the rules of engagement, killed my son and so many. They like I said, he was in recon, and they were attacked by they were in a five-man team and attacked by over 100 Taliban that knew they were coming because we had to let the village elders know the day before, and the village elders just passed all the information on. And so many things that have our heroes' hands tied and just make it so hard as a family to keep it together. And one of those things that upsets me a lot is after they massacred my son, we had drones following, you know, the Taliban into the village. From the second they left the scene of the murder, they followed them through these wadis, you know, these riverbeds or dried beds, and into this building. And we knew they went in that building, 80 to 100 of them. And this great Marine major at the time, he called in to, you know, fire into that building. He witnessed it. He was manning the drone, and they said, no, we can't do that. We don't know who else is in that building. And to the families, that's unfair. It's like no one paid for the murder of my son, and two other Marines died with him that day. And that's just things that very hard to live with, very hard to realize that, hey, you know, he died for this country, and the country just stepped aside. And you know, we have our low percent that are trying to make a difference, but it's embarrassing because we're not loud enough, we're not mad enough. And, boy, you would think by now with a journalist getting decapitated, we would get angry, but it's not the case yet. So, you know, Charlie had mentioned earlier that one family member in a Gulf Star community is committing suicide every week. And it's actually almost two. And you know, we throw those words out there, oh, you'll never be forgotten, you'll never be forgotten. But it's unfortunately, it's not true. The families of the fallen are forgotten, and it really is a shame. And Charlie's putting a great program together with the Michael Strange Foundation to, you know, help, you know, the families that are there. My son's grandfather took his life after my son was killed, and just so many. I was talking to another Gold Star parent today that he lost both his kids. One was killed in action, and one couldn't deal with it and took his life. So he lost. He asked me today, Bill, do I still call myself a father? And it broke my heart, you know, and both his kids. I just, you know, this stuff that still just crushes me, and that's one of them. And we, you know, we have to, and we do a good job. We recognize the wounded, and deservingly so. They sacrifice part of their body, but we also got to remember the people that made it out of there healthy, physically healthy. We owe them something also, because they're getting a lot of crap. And you know, when you're a Gold Star parent, you're in tune to a lot of the stories out there and talking to other families. And everyone knows the number. 22 veterans have taken their life a day. Disgusting. But do you know 6 to 10 of those are college students? So 6 of those 22 are trying to better their life, to better our country, don't have the tools to survive. And that just blows my mind. We're letting 6 college veterans die a day, and no one wants to talk about it.
Wow.
Up in World War II, when they came home, they had the same problems as anybody who's seen prolonged combat and really difficult situations, and there were a lot of problems. But what these folks came home to was a legacy. This is what made it easier for them to adjust. This is what American veterans really need. What Charlie's doing with the Michael Strange Foundation, one of my best friends just down the block from me is a Marine, because there's no former Marines, from Beirut. He got blown up, and he's had problems with the Veterans Administration we're working on constantly. But what they really want and need is to know that the sacrifice was for something. If they came back to an America where there was opportunity for them to get a good job, where there was a chance for their friends and their families to thrive, to enjoy the fruits of liberty that they fought and sacrificed for, you can accept that. Look, folks, if you've done something good for somebody else and you came out the worse for it because you got hurt, whether it's combat or you got injured or you got emotionally damaged, whatever it is that's real, and you know that it was for a good cause, that it actually accomplish something, that somebody came out better because of what you did, like parents who sacrifice themselves for them, who work really, really hard and don't buy things for themselves because they want their children to have better, who spend that extra time with them. So, okay, I can't spend the time with my friends or do the hobbies I was doing because the kid needs me to sit and do the homework with them. Those little sacrifices and the big sacrifices, when you get older and you look back and you say, that was really worth it. I gave up something of myself for somebody else out of a willing choice, and I feel good about it. And that is what our veterans deserve. That's what we all deserve. They aren't over there fighting for the most part because they like to fight. There are some who are great warriors and they just want to go where the fight is. They're not over there fighting because they like to follow orders or they enjoy the military culture, although there are some who that's perfect for their lives. They're over there fighting because of the oath. They're over there fighting for their brothers and sisters in arms and for the Constitution because of us. They're fighting because of us. We need them to do this. They
Correct.
Say, I will do this. So that's what we have to bring this together, folks. Whatever your issue is, that when we help you, and I'm not directing you, but when we help you find an issue where there's a real wedge, a real chance that if you put a little bit of leverage in, you can get a lot of result, like overpasses where five people standing on an overpass for 2 hours can influence profoundly 10,000 people, then you got to do it. Now, Michael Strange's situation, the situation similar with the Army, with the Marines, et cetera, these are wedge issues. There's a reason why they're covering this up. There's something more that they don't want anyone to know. So if you do nothing else but spread the word, if you go online and find the websites and look at the links and spread those to your friends, read them first. Whatever you find online, don't just trust us or anybody else. Anyone can make a mistake or be wrong. Read it first. And when it resonates with you, when you say, this is true and this is important and this is well said and I get it, share it with your friends and tell them why you get it. Tell them what's important to you. Get on Bob's radar.
Yes, you are. You said a whole bunch right there. And you know, just which when they do that, they just show appreciation. You know, the World War II veterans, America has skin in the game back then, and that's the problem, I believe, now. We take everything for granted, our freedoms for granted. And back then, everyone was involved, the women, everyone, but they knew who had the harder, the harder job, but appreciation, gratitude goes a long way for a Gold Star family. I mean, just talking to another Gold Star father that's in Wyoming. You know, he was left a note. He had Gold Star license plates, and him and his wife were inside eating, and he came out to this note, and the note just basically said, I noticed that you're a Gold Star family. Thank you so much for your son's sacrifice. And left a $20 bill or a $50 bill, I believe it was, actually. And it made that, it wasn't the $50. It was the note, that gratitude is healing to us. We go and, we tell people, oh, thank you for your service. Come on, let's say a little bit more. Let's say not only thank you for your service, but what do you do? Why did you choose that part? Just show a little more interest. So it's just not, some gimmick word. Just show them that we really understand that without them, look at how dare ISIS threaten us? What is this country coming to? I mean, we would, we'd wipe them out if our hands were not tied. And we like to say that, I think it even actually came from a Japan admiral or something, in America, behind every blade of grass is someone who will kick your ass. And we need to believe that again, and they need to believe it and stop, mm-hmm. stop nonsense.
That was Yamamoto. It was a quote attributed to him that was never actually proven that he said it, but he said that he did say when we attacked Pearl Harbor and he was, or when he attacked Pearl Harbor and he was congratulated by Tojo and the rest of the statist rulers in Japan, congratulations, he said, I fear we've woken a sleeping tiger. And he studied in America.
Yeah,
he studied at Stanford. So he knew what Americans were about back then, and there's still enough of us who are still about the same things today.
Exactly.
And the quote that was attributed to him was that if when they said, well, you should just continue and attack the West Coast, attack America, and he said, there'd be a gun behind every blade of grass. And that, by the way, folks, is the key right there. You want to win this fight, there's one thing we can't lose. Of all the issues across the board, the one thing that we must not give up on, that we must not allow the other side to win, is the Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms, because as long as we have them, they can't beat us. If they
Amen.
Take the weapons away, they can do anything they want, and they've proven they will.
But, Dan, Bill said something earlier that needs to be noticed, too. He said that you would think that after the death and the beheading of this reporter that someone in America would wake up and do something about it. But so why is it that nothing has really become of that? There's no righteous indignation anymore in this country when people are slaughtered. And I think if you look on your DirecTV guide and you scroll down and you read the titles of the movies and the one-hour dramas, I think what you're going to see is 90% violent story content. Our children have been for decades now being desensitized, preparing us to not be emotionally stimulated when the crap hits the fan. And I think they have been preparing us for this time, and they knew it was going to come, and it's going to get worse, and we'll watch those things unfolding on the news. Actually, CBS, NBC, and ABC, and CNN, they might as well not even worry about reporting this stuff. I am not sure that Americans, even if they saw it on every news channel, would get a burr under their saddle. I'm not sure that a lot. I mean, there are. You know, Dan has this wonderful, not that he has it, but he's part of this wonderful militia of Pennsylvania. We've got Texas militias. There's just militias, and as far as I know, every state. And so there are good people still feeling this righteous indignation, but it's nobody who has, well, very few people who have a national platform to bring this information out to everybody and jump on it in such a way that people, it's like getting stuck by a pin in your butt, and you get up off the couch and you go, holy crap, I got to do something about this. Until that happens, until people can get over this desensitization and understand the magnitude of what's going on around us. I was a poll reader at our election yesterday. I watched car after car come into the poll, and I have my little list of conservative people to vote for, right? Some of them would not even roll their window down. They didn't know whether I was Republican, Democrat, or whatever. You couldn't tell by just looking at me with my little list. There was two of us there. One of them was a Democrat and one was a Republican. And they're just passing us by, and they're looking at us like doing this with their hand, you know, waving us away and, you know, like, oh, please, don't give me that, you know. And so many of them said, I got my own list. I've already made out my ballot. And blah, 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 you know, and they have no idea who they're voting for. And yet they don't want to hear it from anybody else either. They've almost closed their mind off to anything that might be controversial and that maybe they might have to be, they might have to change their mind about something. They don't want to have to do that. So it, in a way, it's very sad, and yet, Bill, we've got people like you and Charles and Dan and James, God bless you, James, and Kelly trying to do what he's doing and Robert doing what he's doing. And you guys are doing such a marvelous job. I just hope that we're getting, you know, you've got some of the other guys on there like Alex forgot his name now anyway. You know, they're doing a great job of getting information out there, but we're still not getting the legitimacy that we deserve from the general public.
I think Alex Jones is who you're talking about.
Yes, Alex Jones.
Why don't, you know, we have to, as family, take a little responsibility. Why don't we, you know, try this? Let's start having dinner all together at the kitchen table and having the parents discuss America and what's happening to it and educating, you know, from within and so the kids learn and the kids see when their fathers are upset with something. And you know, we have to go back to basics, I think. I mean, it's, you know, you said a lot also. I mean, we are a, you know, still the best country out there. I mean, some of us within don't feel that way because it definitely took a turn for the worse. But we have to go back to our roots and teach, you know, how about this? Let's teach who George Washington was, what he meant to this country and the Constitution. And I think you'll see a lot of changes.
That's why I homeschool. And my grandson, you should hear my grandson. I keep meaning to get him on the show because you would just be so flabbergasted at his viewpoint. So I have soaked him in this stuff. I have poured it over him. Anyway, we're trying here.
And real quick, folks, just to let you know, for those who are new to listening to the show, of course, first of all, thank you for coming to the show tonight. And we are live every Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. But I do see there's only about 12 minutes before what we do is called going into extended period, in which the live audio, if you are not called in, will cease in about, as I said, about 12 minutes. So if you'd like to listen to the extended period of the show, or what we sometimes call Bard's Logic After Dark, give us a call at 347-945-7428 if you'd just like to listen in to the extended period. Or if you'd like to chime in, go ahead and call the 347-945-7428 number and push the 1 on your phone dial. And that would let me know that you would like to get into the show. And one thing we'll do, we'll switch things around a little bit. Is normally we do the, you know, panels first, but if someone calls in, we'll go ahead and open up the mics. You know, we had a number of folks who called in, but we either lost their lines or I don't know, but they're no longer on the call. So we'll get them in as soon as they dial in at 347-945-7428, and if they put that they'd like to chime in. But I do see it is about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and so I know Charles had some place that he's got to go and things he's got to do, so I want to open up the mic to you, Charles, if you're still there, and make any parting comments if you got to go.
All right, hold on. Let me get him.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, Charlie, we can hear you.
Of course, yeah, your friend's welcome to show up if you like. I just want to, if you had any party comments before you had to go this evening, and then we can bring him back in if you'd like to stay on. Go ahead, Charles.
I just want to thank all you guys for your support. I'll keep you guys posted how Larry made it. I sent you over the FOIA Act information in an email while we were on. And see how that goes out. And like my friend Billy was telling you, you know, we're having another retreat October 10th to the 12th in Wildwood, New Jersey. I got 30 parents coming in. I got 3 brothers and 2 sisters. Wildwood, New Jersey, very helpful. The American Legion Post is having a dinner for us. But we still need support. We have PayPal on MichaelStrangeFoundation.org. We got a 3-minute video. It says retreat video. Watch that. That's what we do. And we need funds. We need airline tickets. Anybody got a lot of frequent flyer miles they'd like to donate? That'd be great. Some gas cards. These families come from Ohio. They come from Scott Warner's coming. His son was Heath. Tracy from Ohio. We got
people from all over come, and we need support. We're a 501c3. Everything's a tax write-off. And if you want to come support, message me. We always need, you know, people to hand out the tissues. No, and then, you know, the therapist has a way to turn it around and try to stay positive. Like Billy was saying, one Gold Star family member a week dies. And I'm just trying to do something, keep these people going and keep myself going. And with your support, try to get some answers so this don't happen to somebody else, all these other families. So.
And definitely, if you would, Charles, send me the contact information for Larry Klayman. I'd like to get him on the show as well.
I will.
Awesome.
Bill, you want
Bill
back on?
Bill's good. He wasn't expecting it, but he's turning out real good.
Here comes Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to lay down. I got a busy day tomorrow. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you,
Charles.
Take care. Thanks for coming to the show.
Take care. How you doing?
Hey, Bill.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you,
Bill.
Bill,
welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, Bill, you may not realize this. I don't know if you've been on radio or anything much. I know you weren't expecting to be on tonight, but you could do this for a career. You're really good.
I appreciate that. It's an important message to me. I've yet begun to talk. I mean, it's a lot that needs to be said, a lot of things that, you know, we've forgotten as a country. And Charles said earlier, it's not a Democrat, it's not a Republican thing, but it is an American thing. And I got in this debate, I guess you'd call it, with this person, and he was just bashing America, which just, you know, breaks my heart, and even more so since I lost Nick. And, you know, I said, you know the difference between you and I? And he's like, what's that? I said, I'm an American. And he's like, oh, I'm an American, too. And I said, no, you're an American. We can't do this. We can't do this. We can't say this. And that's the problem nowadays. We try to be slick. We try to, you know, make everything, you know, something bad to say. And you know, we're not allowed to do anything. But that's what the media is telling us. But that's baloney. We are America. We are, you know, a great country.
Bill, do you... do you see, is it obvious to you, the purge, that the purge of the few good men in our military? It seems like around the time of SEAL Team 6 being killed and even before that, it seemed like all of our top military guys that were really trying to do a good job and trying to get Obama to do this, do the right thing over there, which is to win. It seems like they're all getting either bumped off, moved around, promoted to some kind of a desk job. You know, everything's happening to, like, either shut them up or get them out of the military. There is, like, a regular purge going on. In fact, one ex-Ranger said, he thinks the only people going to be left in our military pretty soon is women and gays. Do you see that?
And Muslims.
And Muslims, right.
I do see that. And you know, I always used to, and, you know, I was always serious, but I would always tell the officer I was joking, but I really wasn't. I would say, you know, you sold out when you accepted colonel. You know, and I'd say lieutenant colonel and below, they're still fighting for what's right. Colonel and above are in a political game, and if they want to, you know, advance to general, the colonel wants to advance to general, or one star wants to go to 2 or 3 or 4, they got to play by these rules. And now we have a president that it's his rules, it's his ball, and he's going to take it if he doesn't, you know, and play with himself. He'd rather play by himself than than play by, you know, the rules of the country. And, you know, but I, you know, I ask myself, are we this, you know, are we really this stupid? Do we fall for it? How many times are we going to fall for it? I mean, the last one that just has me turning off the news is Defense Secretary Hagel released that we tried to save I'm sorry, I forget the journalist's name. We did a raid and we tried to save him, so the president was doing his best. And the truth of that was, you know, the intelligence he got when they did the raid. What's that?
He sat on it for 30 days.
30 days, exactly.
And now Hagel has given notice that these guys are on a hit list.
Exactly,
so
yep.
They're going to be extra careful. I mean, listen, you know, again, I'm not saying that the people in charge are definitely doing specific things because there's no proof. But there's no proof that they're not, and all evidence points to the fact that they are. And folks, it's not just the military. Look in your own lives, wherever you work, whatever company it is, unless it's a very small company, everybody who is worker is a worker. Everybody who is a first-level supervisor, most of them do their job. There's a few idiots. You go to the next level, you get less of the competence. And you keep going up, and people say, my God, the bosses in charge are completely incompetent. But remember, they're not. They may not know a thing about how to do your job. They may not know a thing about how to run the company. They may be running the company or the government service that they're involved with into the ground. But what they are good at is kissing up and making political gains for their own sake. And those are the people we need to get rid of, I mean, across
Correct.
The board. So you want a good reason why you want to join the Liberty Movement and fight, because you deserve a boss that knows how to do your job. You deserve a boss who cares about you and your job. You deserve a boss who's like you are, somebody who is not like one of those elite leaders, supposed leaders who sits there and tells you what to do, and the next day tells you something different, and the day after that tells you a third thing, and all of them were lies to begin with, and you can't trust them, and they're leading you the wrong place. So you want good leaders? You've got to step up and become a leader. People like Bill here, people like Charlie, they weren't intending to be a leader. I wasn't intending to do anything like this. Cindy wasn't intending. James, no, the rest of us, Kelly, we were not interested in this. This was not our desire. Those people who desire power, that's all they care about. The people who are in it now are trying to fix things, and those are the kind of people who should be in charge. I'm not suggesting any of us have what it takes to be in charge of anything, but there's plenty of people in your own life that you know. I'll bet you anything, every listener out there knows at least five people who would be better as a boss than the boss you've got right now. You probably know or know of at least one person in your neighborhood, in your community, who would be a great mayor or commissioner or congressman. And they don't want the job, and you know they don't want the job. Well, get them to step up to go for that job and help them out, because that's exactly the kind of person we want in that job. Right now, if they're firing, you notice who they're firing. They're firing the few top generals who still obey their oath, and they're firing majors and below, because everybody, as Bill says, who's above colonel, that's political. But those majors and below, these are a lot of guys and ladies who really, really care about doing the job correctly, efficiently, properly, and with the bottom line of restoring and promoting and defending American freedom. Those are the ones they're getting rid of. And by the way, that's a really bad move on their part, on the part of the status, getting rid of those people. They're stupid, because what they're doing is they're throwing out in the private sector more people to work with us. More people who are no longer burdened by their current military service, which says they can't get involved in partisan political activities or any number of other things. They can't get involved in media campaigns. They can't get involved. If you're a current active duty serving person, you can't get involved in a lot of stuff, and that's actually a pretty good rule. But once you're out, hey, you do what you want to do, and you know the truth. And these guys have some mad skills. I know quite a few of them, and boy, they're on my side.
And
yeah, and they have something
that's got less than a minute. If you'd like to listen to the extended period, give us a call at 347-945-7428. I know a couple of folks who've already have done so, but I do want to bring things back to James and Kelly, because I'd like to, you know, bring them back in. So, James, if there's anything you'd like to add, and then after that, we'll bring you back, Kelly. Go ahead, Jen.
I'd just like to say I hope that we can eventually, I mean, I really, the sooner the better, but if it took 20 years later for some Freedom of Information Act to finally, you know, crack something that was top secret out, you know, we've got to get to the bottom of what really happened. You know, and it's going to take some major upheaval in the people that are operating in Washington, D.C. You know, I hope it all comes out. I hope that when you know, I hope, you know, what I'm hoping is, you know, and maybe it's a bit far-fetched and maybe it's just, a, you know, whatever, it's just a wish, you know, but, you know, we've got Trey Gowdy digging into Benghazi right now, and I think if they actually crack that nut, I think the rest of the House of Cards will implode.
Mm-hmm.
And we will find out about all of these because, well, because they'll finally realize that we've got too much to hide here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at some point there's going to be a scapegoat. And, well, who better to make than one president, you know, than a whole bunch of other people? Because if they really dug in as deep as it could go, I think the entire, you know, the entire Senate, intelligence subcommittee would be at least subpoenaed and questioned because somebody knew what was going on somewhere, and it's time we found out, you know, it's time we found out.
Well, it's obvious that Obama knew about it because
he finds out everything on the news.
Oh, sure. No. If he didn't know about it and if he wasn't in on it the whole way through, he would not be protecting those people like he is. He would just let them go down because anybody wants to take the heat off themselves if they can. But he can't,
well, you can't,
he can't bring them
Cindy,
down without...
Cindy, you can't really use that argument entirely because if you look at Watergate, Richard Nixon did not know specifically about the plumbers who were breaking into the Daniel Ellsberg's office or breaking into the Watergate campaign headquarters of the Democratic Party. He didn't know that. But as soon as he found out, he had a choice, which was to either turn it over to the authorities or to cover up, and he did cover up. Now, in this case, I'm absolutely convinced that Obama knows everything that's going on. He is too much of a narcissist the guy likes to have his fingers in everything. He knows what's happening.
It's called deniable culpability. Kelly here, yeah. It's called deniable culpability. I didn't know, therefore I'm not responsible. But once they do know, like Reagan, when he had Iran-Contra, the way he fessed up was in front of the American people, avoiding impeachment, but there are many things that have to happen, and it's beyond frustrating where this has gone, and I'm suspicious of the race baiting going on from the Michael Brown scenario, and because you know Al Sharpton showed up, Jesse Jackson, oh, all the whites hate you, no we don't, oh, all the whites, no we don't. That's called race baiting. The crucifixion, if you will, that would happen if Congress tried to just right now get an impeachment from the House, this is from the words of Congressman LaMalfa that was here a week ago Monday, said, oh, we would just get crucified and then we'd lose a lot of elections to Democrats and we would end up not having control of the House. So it's a very fine line. Now, if this is another scandal, SEAL Team 6 and the Chinook helicopters. So if say, a grand jury or Trey Gowdy through a congressional subpoena starts exposing this one to the American public, this one to the American public, this one to the – I can't even name them all anymore. You know, he's Fast and Furious was one of the first ones. You know, Benghazi, you got the kill list, you got the IRS scandal, you got – and there's scandals we probably haven't even heard about yet. But if somehow – Between the Congress and the grand jury's coming out with presentments, pretty soon, boom, 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 it keeps coming out in papers, Congress might have a paved road, if you will, to issue the impeachment and not worry about the race baiting. I don't know if you've been keeping up with Missouri and Ferguson, Missouri. You know, and I'm not taking sides because I don't know. I wasn't there. The officer could have shot this guy dead in cold blood. He could have done it in self-defense. We don't know. Ferguson, another one happened. It was clearly videotaped by somebody. This black guy got up on, he was coming towards the cop, goes on the sidewalk, goes up on like a little retaining wall about 2 foot tall. It was right next to the sidewalk. Then he started lunging at him, and they just took him out. And there's some that are saying, oh, race baiting. Oh, by the way, Jesse Jackson, you know, the wonderful Reverend Jesse Jackson, as Rush Limbaugh used to say, he was kicked out of Ferguson pretty much by everybody there. But then you got
just,
the ACLU.
Just recently, he was kicked out?
Yeah, it's hilarious. See, this is what's frustrating. Is the fine line, and this is what the socialists do. They get a country divided. They kick out the top military people who will oppose them. This is out of your classic Soviet takeover handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pick any country. This is the playbook, and we're watching it happen here. So I'm just putting my 2 cents in here when say presentments come out from the legal grand jury and then Congress and more and more and more, and assuming the mainstream media will cover it well enough, which then you have to go to the alternative media, we could see a change before 2016, which really January 2017 is when the new president takes over, which, by the way, Hillary can no longer run for president. Do you know why?
Why?
They took they found a brain tumor.
Well, they were doing a colonoscopy.
That's for real.
Oh, they were doing a colonoscopy. Was it because her head was so far up? Right now, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Anyway,
Dan got that one figured out. You know, I have to repeat that again. I'll say the joke. You say the punchline. Hillary Clinton can no longer run for president because they found a brain tumor.
While doing a colonoscopy.
So the head's too far up her.
Well, anyway.
I'm going to shift gears here because I just found an audio clip that I promised Cindy I would play last week, but we did not get to play it. So do we still have you on the line, Bill?
I am still on.
Okay, great. So what we'll do is I'll play the audio and see what your thoughts on it. And then since we got Cindy sent it to me, then we'll get your thoughts as well, Cindy. And this is McCain's what his thoughts are or were on the Iraq withdrawal. It's only about a 3-minute clip, and then we'll discuss that because, as I said, I wanted to. Told Cindy we'd talk about this last week, but we didn't get around to it, so I'm going to bring it now. So here it is.
Starting in early 2009, from their desire to accelerate our withdrawal from Iraq faster than our commanders recommended to their hands-off approach to the Iraqi process of government formation last year, to their record of delay and passivity on the question of maintaining a presence of U.S. troops beyond this year, this administration has consistently failed at the highest level to lead on Iraq. I say again, perhaps this outcome should not have been a surprise. It's what the president has consistently promised to do, and that decision makes good political sense for this president. But such decisions should not be determined by domestic politics. The brave Americans who fought so valiantly and given so much did so not for political reasons, but for the safety and security of their fellow citizens, for their friends, for their families, for their children's futures, and for us. This is a decisive moment in the history of America's relationship with Iraq and with all of the countries of the broader Middle East. This is a moment when the substantial influence that we have long enjoyed in that part of the world could be receding. In fact, is receding. We cannot allow that to be our nation's future. We must continue to lead. We must not let short-term political gains dictate our longer-term goals. We need to continue to shape a freer, more just, and more secure future both for Iraq and for the peoples across the Middle East, for it is in our own national security interest to do so. Over 4,000 brave young Americans gave their lives in this conflict. I hope and I pray that these decisions made in large part for political reasons, I pray that their sacrifice is not in vain. I hope that their families will not mourn the day that their sons and daughters went out to fight for freedom for the Iraqi people. Unfortunately, it is clear that this decision of a complete pullout of United States troops from Iraq was dictated by politics and not our national security interests. I believe that history will judge this president's leadership with the scorn and disdain that it deserves.
That was so well said. Too bad he didn't mean a word of it. He didn't mean a word of it. The guy's a great speaker, but I look at people's actions. McCain has done nothing to help the military. He has done nothing to help American liberty. He has done everything to help the enemies of America. The guy is no good in my book. I don't care how well he speaks or about his alleged service. This is Dan.
Not you, but who was the speaker?
That was
John
McCain.
John McCain.
Oh, geez.
I don't buy a word of it either.
Well,
what he said is true.
Let's bring it back to that, but let's get Bill his comments first.
Well, you'll never hear me, or you won't hear me compliment McCain or stick up with him, but I don't care if he meant it or not. The words are right. They're dead on.
The words are right.
Yeah, they're dead on, and we need to listen to what he said, and we need to spread it, because speaking out of the Gold Star point of view, talking to a lot of, you know, my son was killed in Afghanistan, but talking to a lot of the families that lost their son in Iraq, they're sick to their stomach. Why did their child, you know, die? What was the sacrifice for? And, you know, we left there too early. We left there for political reasons, and you know, I'm so scared, you know, that it's going to be the same thing in Afghanistan. We're going to, you know, if we don't start listening to those words, regardless who said it, and again, I'm not a McCain fan, but the words are right on, and the families I tell you what, that, you know, with what's going on now, that is going to happen in Afghanistan, and I am going to be sick, over it, and I should be, and America should be. I mean, we have the greatest hero stepping up. You know, I think Charlie told you, I served in the Marine Corps, and after my son died, I received a letter from my first CO. He retired as a lieutenant colonel, but he was a captain then, Captain Blanco, and he sent me this greatest letter, and he said, I don't know if you remember me, but I was your first CO, and I was so touched that he remembered me. I definitely remembered him. But he just said, thank you for raising your son. You know, America needs people like that to step up and defend our freedom. Unfortunately, we need them to stay alive to fix this country. And, we didn't have, you know, in my case and Charlie's case, we didn't have it both ways. I understand that the test for McCain, but concentrate on the words. I mean, you know, we are I hate to compliment the guy, but he hit it right on, and he was right about ISIS. I mean, there are some things. Again, I am not going to stand up for the guy, but he is speaking some words that are ringing to my heart anyway.
It's true, but, you know, with ISIS, he was actually the one who was spearheading, pushing the idea of us arming the Syrian rebels against Assad, this bad dictator, same kind of justification that we used to go after Saddam Hussein, who was admittedly a very, very, very bad dude. But rather than supporting the people there who really want freedom, we ended up just destroying the infrastructure and supporting the wrong side, a bunch of Shiites who were proxies for Iran. When the people stood up in Iran and wanted to overthrow the mullahs, we didn't support them. And the very people who were the so-called Syrian rebels who are going against Assad, who, by the way, didn't discriminate in any kind of harsh way against anyone who wasn't a real threat. The guy was a dictator. He still is. He's a bad guy. I don't like him. On the other hand, if you were a Christian in his country or a Shia or a Sunni or a Salawi or any of the other groups, they didn't kill you just because of what you believed. So he wasn't as bad a guy as the Syrian rebels, who, by the way, are also known as ISIS. That's the Islamic State in Syria, or as President Obama now says, ISIL, which is the Islamic State in the Levant, which includes Israel. So he's basically saying that they are entitled to own Israel. McCain did say the right thing, and he said it so convincingly. But we keep electing people who say the right thing. Heck, President Obama in 2008 said a bunch of really awesomely great things. Things that we could all believe in. Do we see him actually doing a transparent administration, cutting the deficit in the budget? Do we see him closing Guantanamo or bringing our boys home? Certainly not in the way that we're supposed to be bringing them home. We're not supposed to be bringing them home to funerals. And the idea of, well, we've got to get out of Iraq, which he now lies and says he never did. You know, in Germany, which we defeated with the help of the Soviets in World War II, and God, we should have let Patton finish the job over there. But in Germany, we had a standing military presence, not just because we needed bases and hospitals, and we were opposing the Soviets. We had a standing military presence because for 10 years after the war plus, the SS, who were the committed fanatics for Nazism, they were fighting. They were, cutting people's heads off, hanging them, blowing them up, threatening, intimidating, extorting. Gee, it sounds a lot like terrorism. Well, we should have kept those people in Iraq the way McCain said, but I don't trust McCain himself at all.
Right.
Well, what I thought was interesting about it, and the reason I asked Robert to play it, was the timing of it. It was he gave that speech at the time that Obama had begun to draw down our troops, and he was making a prophecy. And at the time, he had the controversial viewpoint. All the libertarians were saying, get us out of there. Conservative Republicans were saying, get us out of there. Everyone was saying, that's a lost war. We need to get out of there. Well, not a lost war, but it's a done deal. It's finished. We're not doing anything else there. Let's get out. And he was the only one saying, look, we're leaving too soon. And it was not a popular viewpoint back then. And now it is the popular viewpoint. And I'm wondering if he realizes that he was actually on our side. That's what interested me, because it was the right thing. He was absolutely correct. His prophecy was absolutely correct, and yet it was not popular at the time. We only now see the results of that.
Got a little joke here about Robert. We've been chatting a little bit on Facebook, and I'm teasing him that the only reason why the NSA listens to all of us is because it started with Robert. He's that radical, and now the NSA is tapping our phones, and at least someone listens to me. All right, so, all his friends wear the tinfoil hats. That's what I teased him. And he said, no, actually, Robert wrote back, yeah, actually, I wear a copper hat. Copper helmet. And then come to find out, I asked him, are you a heavy metal head? He said, yes. So Robert is a copper helmet. And So Robert's got a copper helmet and a metal head. So, you know, real simple. Just hook up a little bit of wires and you've got a battery.
We got to be careful here, Kelly, because there are people who are going to reach back in history. There's people going to reach back in history and say, copper helmet, copper head, those were the guys in the North who were supporting the South during the Civil War. You know, they haven't got much to hang us on these days. I mean, all of us patriots out here, we're not all perfect. There's a lot of human beings who make mistakes, who do stupid, goofy things.
You know what's missing here? You didn't deny you're wearing a tinfoil hat.
Me? No. My skull is solid bone. It's impervious. I've proved that on numerous occasions. I've had so many head injuries that I just walked away from.
Yeah, me too.
It's astounding. Yeah.
Oh, so
that probably explains
a lot. Now I understand what happened to you. All right. Anyway, I wanted to, we're talking about John McCain, supposedly he's a maverick, but he's kind of a moderate. I would like to see a debate between Mitt Romney and John McCain. Not, they're both up on stage, but they don't debate each other. They both debate
themselves
and see who wins.
That would be great.
There's a YouTube video just for both of them doing that.
For every debate, each candidate gets one debate all to themselves, not with the other candidates, where all that the moderator does, and Robert could be the moderator because he's really good at this, and all they have to do is debate their former views and explain why what they said then is completely different from what they're saying now. And there are some. Look, Ronald Reagan, who a lot of people really admire, he was a liberal guy. I was a progressive Marxist. I mean, there's a lot of us who have come a long way from one side of the spectrum to another. And like Ronald Reagan, I can point
life. Was that before or after you hit your head that you were a Marxist?
It's been a lifelong kind of a hobby of mine. But,
what, hitting your head?
You got to understand, when I see an obstacle.
I'm just teasing here.
No, I understand. But when I was a younger man and I saw an obstacle, my idea of getting through the obstacle was getting through the obstacle. Now, in my older years, I'm 53 now, I have learned a little bit of finesse, a little fancy footwork, go around it, try and get them off balance, et cetera. But it's kind of like football. I liked to just pick a target and knock them down. And, head injuries didn't matter. Which, again, does explain a lot. But it would be great to see somebody explain. Some will be able to do it honestly and say that they had a life experience that changed them, that they realized something by being part of having a position and having to administer, and they had a kid or they had somebody sick in their family. And they'll say, and this is what moved me from this position to where I am now. And those honest people I can accept. I'm not going to say that 49% of the American public is completely stupid, completely bad, completely evil. They're not zombies. I'll say that they're mistaken, okay, and that they've been misled and that they've been mistreated and miseducated their whole lives. For generations this has been going on. But I won't call them evil. Now, so I believe they can come to correct viewpoints based on truth. But there's a lot of politicians out there, like Obama, who simply deny what they said before that they ever said it. And I would love to have him up on a dais and show a clip of what he said and then say, this is what you did. No bullshit, no obfuscating, no running rings around the truth, no denying it. Just explain how you got from point A to point B. And it's funny, the people like John McCain and like President Obama and like Mitt Romney, for God's sakes, can't really explain why they suddenly started saying conservative things when they never, ever had anything that changed them. And I also suppose that there are these come-to-Jesus moments where somebody suddenly sees the light, but I got to think those are fairly rare.
Well, what I'd like to see happen
real
is
quick, Kelly,
if I
real
was
quick,
moderator.
Real quick, Kelly, this will only take a minute, and since we're talking about debates and things of that nature,
I do have a one-minute clip of a debate between Romney and Obama that I think everyone will find humorous. And as I said, it only takes a minute, and I've been dying to play this since we've talked about
Charlie, with what Dan said. Charlie's phone
ahead,
is beeping the low battery, so I'm gonna say goodnight to you guys, and it's been a pleasure talking
to
you.
Well, thanks, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
All right.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. Have a great night.
You too, and definitely call back into the show at other shows. It'd be great to have you back on. Well, he dropped. I'll go ahead and talk to Charles and about having him back on. But then we'll go ahead and play this. I think we'll get a kick out of it. A few of you guys, just not all of us, have heard this before, but it is funny.
Mr. President, just how different are you from Governor Romney?
Now, let me be clear. I agreed with Governor Romney on many things. For instance, abortion. He was pro-choice most of his adult life. So was I. But he changed his position when he became presidential candidate Romney.
Hold on.
Now, let's take guns. Now, Governor Romney and I, we were in complete agreement on gun control. Now, that is, until he changed his mind.
But I...
And on health care, well, I was so inspired by Romneycare that I nationalized it and called it Obamacare.
Whoa.
But now, presidential candidate Romney is against the individual mandate and universal health care. Now, I agreed with Governor Romney on many things, but this presidential candidate Romney, I don't even know the guy. Then again, he doesn't seem to know himself.
Oh, come on!
Governor Romney?
Any our teacher is responsible for the content of this message.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, you know, some of these politicians that are flip-floppers, I'd love to be the moderator and say, Mr. Politician, are you schizophrenic? And he would say, no, and neither am I.
Well, and this is exactly why.
Go ahead, James.
I'm glad Romney wasn't elected, because you know, the Democrats are full of people like Obama. You know, they've been indoctrinated into that excuse me, leftist way of thinking. And that's the way they want to aim this country. They're all that way. I mean, if you could point one out that's not, I'd be happy to sing their praises, but I haven't seen one in years. And I don't know, at some point, things have got to come to a tipping point where things will go back, you know, the pendulum will swing back the other direction. But I'm telling you what, if the best that the GOP can pull off in 2016 is Mitt Romney, I'm probably going to start my own political party, because at that point they're lost. I mean, I keep hearing more and more rumors about him thinking about running it for 2016, and I hope they stay rumors.
Yeah, I heard some. I actually got an email from Newsmax about Mitt Romney running again in 2016. And then, of course, it gave, you know, a list of other folks, you know, possibly running. I think there might have been about 20 folks. I was highly disappointed to not see Newt Gingrich's name on there, but it's still early, so let's draft him. Go ahead, James.
Well, I mean, that's just pretty much it. I mean, there are so many better, you know, people that are up there that would – that would just be much better. You know, Rand Paul isn't perfect, and he's kind of fallen out of favor by a lot of people. But comparatively speaking to who we have now, Rand Paul would be a saint of a president, I think. Ted Cruz, I wish they'd finally just put the hammer down on the eligibility issue so people would quit talking about it. Either he is or he isn't. So let's quit. You know, let's nail it down with the law and explain it to everybody. I've heard a lot of different theories on it. He is because his mother was American. He isn't because he's born in Toronto. You know, let's get that finalized and get that argument out of the way. And but we've got a lot of different candidates with a different, you know, there are potential candidates for 2016 that have very good qualities that I think in their own way would be at least adequate, presidents, they would at least make an attempt to look out for this country. But I don't want another rhino. I want a president that actually, you know, doesn't at least directly, blatantly answer to somebody else.
Well, real quick, I just got a message here from Cindy. Cindy, you've got to get going, and it's about 12:30 Eastern time. So I'll go ahead and give you the opportunity to do any closing thoughts before you have to go, ahead, Cindy.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say goodbye to you guys before I go. You know, I'm a homeschooler now, and we just started school again, so I got to get going. But Dan, thanks for helping us get that guy on. He's an awesome guest, and truly jerks at your heart to hear him speak. And I'm so grateful to the parents who allow their children to go off and protect me. It's such an honorable thing when I think of how the Muslim families are like paid to, you know, send their child off to be a suicide bomber somewhere or something, you know, and they're all proud of that, you know. It just tears my heart up. You know, what kind of people would allow that? I don't know. I believe that our parents, at one time anyway, were doing the noble thing by sending our children to protect us. But it was, when you look at what Obama's doing now, it's a totally different situation. I don't know that I would want my kids to be in the military. In fact, I'm sure I would not want my child in the military right now. I would not be proud of that right now, except that I would know that my child would be doing his best to do the honorable thing if he was in the military. That would make me proud. But the way our military is being run, we have a sorry excuse for a commander-in-chief. But anyway, thank you, Dan, for having given us that opportunity, and thank you, Robert, for always being faithful and getting a show ready and getting us together and, you know, helping us solve world problems. Thank you, Kelly and James and all you guys for what you're doing.
It's great to have you back, Cindy. We missed you when you were gone. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like Cindy's input stuff.
Well, thanks. Bill's
an awesome guy, and Cindy, much gratitude. You came up with one thing that we haven't really gone into in a great deal this evening, but is really the key to all of this, which is you said that we need to have somebody on a national level talking about these things. And I'll tell you what, it's happening on a national level. You won't see it on the mainstream media. But and this isn't about me. There's people way, way more influential than I am at this point. But last week, I set a kind of a milestone, a benchmark for myself, compete this week, so I can exceed it. I don't know if I will this week, but last week, the people who read the articles that I have written, where I'm saying the same stuff that we all believe in, and I've been putting it on Twitter. The people who follow me sent that out to a million potential eyes. 1 million retweet range is what they call it, which I don't know if any of them read it. I hope they did. Some of them are deciding to read more. I turn them on to this show and other good things. But there is national impact. And if you look away from the mainstream media, it's hard to know what the impact is until you start looking a little bit closer. When you see somebody on Twitter or on Facebook who's putting out something and who's spending a lot of time putting out truth, not just retweeting stuff or, you know, sharing they've edited, but really carefully examined truth with commentary. And there's a few people on Facebook I rely on. Harriet's one of them, who's just excellent. They go to the trouble of doing the scholarship, and they share this, and I read it. I'm like, wow, you know, thank God I don't have to try and read 10,000 news articles today. Somebody's already done it and found the 100 best and then the 20 best of those and then written a cogent analysis of them so that I can benefit from that. They're doing important work. And if you look at who's following them and how many people are following them and how many people are sharing the information that they share, you'll find that many of you, look at overpasses. I would venture to say that James' organization, the one that he is spearheading and leading, has had a tremendous impact in America. Literally tens of millions of people who were barely aware, if at that, of key issues who have woken up or at least taken that first step. And some of them have been converted. They've seen this couple of words on a sign that got them started, and they saw another one, another overpass with a couple more words, and they started to think, and they started to wonder, and they said, what could it be that would get somebody out in the middle of a hot afternoon to stand on an overpass with fumes of trucks passing by and all that noise to share this couple of words with me on a sign? Because that's all you can put on a sign. And that got them on the Internet where they did a Google or a Bing search or went on to whatever social media they used, and they started looking a little closer at it and started reading about it. I'm seeing something really tremendous on Facebook. A lot of the people who I've been noticing lately are people who say, former liberal, former Democrat, former Republican, former whatever it was. They used to believe in this crap that's being fed to us, and they don't believe it anymore. And it's just like a reformed addict for any kind of unhealthful drug, including cigarettes, and I do still smoke, full disclosure. But when those people quit, nobody is more adamant and convincing when it's about the reasons why you can't do that anymore. It's bad for you. And here they're talking about something that they get, and they feel extra motivated, because nothing gets you more pissed off than when somebody who earned your trust, you thought, somebody who deserved your trust, you thought, turns out to have been playing you for a fool the whole time. Why that's stalk territory. That's where you won't ever give up, where if there's anything you can ever do to expose them to other people, I mean, really, you'll boil their bunny.
Well,
as a reference to a movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Quite close, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, absolutely, I agree with almost 100% of what you guys say most of the time. And my only difference of opinion probably comes from my knowledge of what prophecy says in the Bible is going to happen in the future. And so that's why I sound a lot of times very, very pessimistic, because I know in the end we are going to lose the battle. I just am not going to allow myself to be one of the people that's responsible for losing that battle. I'm going to keep fighting until I go down.
And who knows when?
Nobody knows when. Nobody knows when. You're right.
That's right. That's right.
And a lot of people in the Christian church, that's what I am so, I get so mad at them, because they sit back and they say, well, whatever God's going to do, God's going to do. And they completely neglect the fact that they live in a democratic republic. They have a voice. They are the people who are supposed to say what's going on in this country. And they have relegated that to someone else, to the non-believers and the atheists and the people who have no moral sense at all. And they've left it to those people to figure out what's going to happen. And so this is what we have. What we have right now is the result of that. It's the result of the Christians who founded this country. We have not carried on their legacy. We've dropped the ball, and we've allowed everything to go. Who knows? I mean, it's like our founder said, our Constitution was written for a moral and religious people, and it will not work for anyone else. And so here we are, someone else, and it's not working. So that's why sometimes I get to sounding pessimistic, but like I said, I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to try to get other people to keep fighting. And I'm going to give it my best shot because I don't think we have to go, you know, I don't think we have to go at any particular time. You know, it's when we leave it, it's when we leave it up to God and say, okay, we're done. Forget it. I'm done trying. Never mind. I'm out of here.
But God gives it to us. He gives us this free choice to decide for ourselves what we're going to do because it means so much more. And I don't want to offend anyone who's an atheist, but I do believe, and if you're offended, that's tough. You don't have to like what I say. But I believe that God gives it this free choice to us so that when we come to him, it means so much more than if it was just his will that we follow him. And when we do what's right, it counts for more. And what the founder said was a moral people. They didn't mention religious. I'm not a very religious guy in the sense of personally needing ritual and rite and fellowship. And I appreciate those who do. I mean, if it motivates them to live a better life, to be more decent to their neighbors, to take more responsibility and to care, I don't care what it is. I know people who call themselves atheists, who are libertarian to the core, and there are plenty of libertarians who do believe in God as well. And some of these people are the most decent people. They go out of their way to try and not harm others and to try and help others and to be responsible for their own lives and to assist others in being strong and powerful on their own. Personally, I don't care what anybody calls themselves. I have learned the hard way that just because somebody speaks well, I speak well, don't believe a word I'm saying. I don't ask that anyone believe me. If what I'm saying is true, it'll be mirrored in the actions of my life, and it'll be consistent. And then after you've had time and experience, you might choose to trust me. And I'll do the same for you. I'll listen to what you say. What McCain said in that clip was absolutely right on. But I also watch what you do. And, folks, when what somebody does doesn't match what they say, go with what they do and ignore what they say. So, Cindy, you're a good woman, and don't be depressed. We're doing fine. We're going to do better.
Oh, I'm not depressed. That's not the problem. I know sound pessimistic, but it's not because
pessimistic.
I'm depressed. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you're a pessimist, you'll never be disappointed.
Yeah, you'll always be pleasantly surprised, right?
Yeah.
You know, well, honestly, when it comes to, final ending to what we're doing here, you know, any apocalypse or whatever you want, you know, whatever word you have for it, everybody, you know, there's a lot of different ones. And personally, I've always had a grim fascination with hoping that, well, we were in that time because, I mean, let's face it, if you're going to be alive in any period in history, as far as being eventful in the hereafter, it's like, hey, we could talk about it. I was there when it all hit the fan. I was there. And you'll be able to talk about that forever.
Yeah, so, you're right.
So there is an upside. There is an upside to being alive in that last, in that 11th hour and 59th minute when it all comes crumbling down and everything, you know. So, no, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
Well,
exciting, but,
Right, it is. If I wasn't trying to stop it, if I wasn't trying to hinder that crash, I'd be embarrassed to say I was there. But I will be proud to say that I was there and I was trying my best to save America. So, anyway. Thank you, guys. I got to go. Love you all.
Good night.
Love you.
You too, Cindy. You take care. Talk
all
to
right.
you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So there's something new. I just got some news. Personal Liberty Digest, Bob Livingston, his group, if you've heard of him. Let's see here. You know that Tom DeLay, well, grand jury got him on many years ago while he was off the jury leaver, grand jury in Travis County, Texas, and it was the group Texans for Public Justice, yes. They're the ones that got Ronnie Earl to get him. Well, now we have a governor, which, of course, is Rick Perry. Rick Perry got indicted on a couple of really lame counts. And like Tom DeLay is probably going to get dismissed, but basically Perry's political career is over, even if he gets acquitted. But come to find out, this Texans for Political Justice, oh, wait a minute, are they a progressive coalition? Yeah, and a very liberal bastion within Texas, which is Austin, yes, in Travis County. And who funded them, according to, the Media Research Center? It would be, oh, George Soros gave Texas for Public Justice $500,000. So they did all this research and work for $500,000, and Governor Perry got indicted. Now, isn't that interesting? Soros.
So yeah, no, there's definitely something, some things you've been working on, Kelly, and we'll have to, you know, pan down a date where we can have a show dedicated to what you're doing, perhaps next week. I do have a couple calls and different folks.
If you want a date, Robert, I'm sorry, it's not my type.
Speaking of that, gentlemen,
not that there's anything wrong with that.
And since there's other gentlemen on here, at least on the line, we've only got about 13 minutes left of the extended period. Of course, I like to have the last five to kind of close things out. So let's go ahead and start taking some last-minute thoughts. And so first we'll go over to you, James, and then Dan, and then Kelly, and then I will proceed to close out the show. So it looks like we have about 2 minutes each to close out. So go ahead, James.
Well, I'd just like to encourage everybody, you know, to start getting involved with what's going on in your life. Look around you, and if you feel like something doesn't feel, if it looks like something doesn't, you know, isn't right, if it just doesn't sit right with you, you want to look into it. You know, we have a wonderful nation that we have here in the United States. As bad as it is, it's still the best place to be. And the amazing thing about that is that we can get back to where we are truly prosperous, but we've got to stand together as a country and do something positive, whatever it is, whatever you can think of. You know, if you can't think of anybody and you see somebody else doing something positive, well, just go work with them until you can come up with maybe something bigger and better. But be a positive force for this nation. And it only takes one person. You might be that one person that turns it all around. You won't know until you try.
So thank you, James. It's good to have you on the show. And you got something else coming up soon that you're going to be working on, correct?
On the 29th and 30th here, on the 30th specifically, we're dedicating that to Sergeant Tamarosi in Mexico, you know, because, you know, the Mexican president, you know, apparently he and Obama have the same news network because he just found out about it, apparently. And, you know, so, you know, so we're dedicating that day to raising public awareness to the fact that we have a Marine that was arrested on trumped-up charges. They say he was literally 60 seconds from the border. And now he sits in a Mexican prison when all they could have done is said, you need to go that way and waited a minute, literally. And now he's sitting in jail, and more people need to know about that. So on the 30th, that's what we're doing there. And then on the 29th, you know, we're focusing on basically good law enforcement officers. You know, ones that understand the oath that they took and they work accordingly, because most of them are that way. You know, and then of course we don't want to forget our Border Patrol right now, which they're just under siege. And, you know, with all of that on there though, you know, and that's the beauty about Overpass being as big as it is we will still, until something gets done, our number one thing is impeach Obama, and it will be until that happens.
All right. Well, yeah, definitely keep us posted, and perhaps if we get some time, I'll talk to you off air
about that, and I know you were talking with Mark Brasek from the Patriot Journalist Network, so perhaps you guys can get back in touch and do something together with that. So we'll bring it over to you, Dan, and then Kelly, and then I'll shut things down. Go ahead, Dan.
I'd like to echo what James said about people getting involved. Folks, on a personal note, I've mentioned many times that this is not what I want to do. I don't really like limelight at all. I really like privacy, what I used to have. I like it when people don't know who the heck that guy is standing in line at the convenience store or at the flea market, just another guy. And so it's a sacrifice, but it's not that much. Really, folks, think about it. It's not that much. I'm honored to know all these great people, not just the people you've heard on this show, but so many more, many of which you're going to hear on this show. People who have decided to step out of their comfort zone to take that risk, whether it's in a public arena or, you know, we have guys working locally who are just really, really good at numbers, filling out Freedom of Information Act requests, doing audits. We have people who are just great ralliers who just get everybody involved, get them to show up. I've mentioned before, we have people who bake cookies, like my wife, you know. It doesn't matter what it is you're doing, if you're doing something, because when you start doing it, you'll start getting the rewards of knowing that your conscience tells you you've done something right, you've done something correct, and it's not just for you, it's for others that you care about, your children and other children yet unborn. When you do these things, you're going to find that you start associating with people who are better. They're better because they decide that they're going to do better. They're going to do the right thing in some small way or some large way. And you'll find local leaders that you can get behind. And you'll also find that as you go along, you run out of time. And then you decide certain things in your life are not as important. I'm not saying you should give up things. I make time for important things. I've got to fix the house. I've got to fix the cars. I've got to go to work. I've got to take care of my family. But you give up other things, and you learn to be more efficient, and you start learning from the other people who are doing similar things how to be more efficient. And all of a sudden, you turn around and you realize that you're a leader, that there's 100,000 people, 10,000, who knows what that number is, who are actually paying attention to you and saying, well, what should we do next? Because most people are followers. They're not bold enough to step up. If you're bold enough, do it. And by the way, even those great men who founded this country, the leaders like Washington, followed somebody very important. They followed God. And some of them were deists like Ben Franklin. So he wasn't into organized churches or religion. He didn't espouse any of the gospel or any of the rest of that stuff, although he knew it very well. But what he did was he espoused the ideals behind it. The ideals that our country was founded on were ideals of liberty, ideals of that free choice that God gives us, and choosing the right thing, choosing the proper thing. When I say correct, I don't mean politically correct. I mean in your heart. Are you going to pass by somebody who's hurting, or are you going to stop and help them? When you see something that needs fixing, are you going to let it fall apart, or are you going to stop and fix it? And can you do it all yourself? Nobody can. The Amish, when they do a barn raising, they accomplish in one afternoon, voluntarily, what would take a single man, assuming he could do it himself, a year, maybe longer, if that man could even raise those timbers. But in one afternoon, without anybody working up too much of a sweat or getting in any kind of physical danger, they raise a barn that will stand for 300 years. Because where I live, there are barns like that. And it seems a simple
thing. I wish we had more part of that 300 years, Dan. But
I go on. Go ahead,
Bob. I'm running out. I apologize. But, yeah, we've only got a few more minutes left. Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. You know how I kind of folks off. But, Kelly, we'll bring it over to you, and then I have to shut things down, and we'll look forward to the next show. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'd like to do the next show, but I think more I want to prepare a little bit more with an attorney, you know, about the grand jury, because I know we've been talking about that a little bit. I got to find out his schedule, Richard Fry is his name. And he's just a brilliant guy. He loves the Constitution. And, but yeah, I think it's something we can do. The certain ducks have to get lined up.
Sure.
And more stuff has to be put together. So I want to get the ability to get packets to people and get an attorney's signature on it. It's a silly thing. It's just like people get amazed, and then they say, are you an attorney? And I say, no, I'm honest.
But attorneys don't help what I'm trying to accomplish because they just don't know it. You know, we had Stuart Rhodes on, and he's like, well, you know, I went to Yale, and he said they didn't teach me about the Constitution or the grand jury.
Yeah,
and so that's kind of what, I want to line this up a little bit more, bring Richard Pry up to speed, and then I want to get the, and I doubt if I can do it next Wednesday because I'll probably be spending time with my son and family.
No problem.
So that's, yeah.
Well,
so,
as Dan said, and we understand that, but all right. Well, I have to go ahead and close things out. We'll get it together, Kelly, and then we'll see what goes.
Well, yeah. One more quick thought, though. I want to get our Blog Talk radio program over to Congressman Doug LaMalfa because he was listening.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll definitely want to bring him on as well. And I know you've been working with some Congress folks about getting some information to them, and it'll be great to have them on as well. So,
I doubt
we'll
they'll be able to come on,
out,
but yeah.
Well, we could see what we could do, but
we'll give the DVD to them or something, you know.
So there we go. We'll get an audio to them and go from there. But anyway,
yeah.
So everyone, thanks very much for coming on, and take care and have a good night. And of course, I will end tonight as I do every night. For the show, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. So take care, folks. Good night, and we'll see you next time.
Good night, folks.
Take care.